Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
And now we are in, as one of our listeners reminded us, this is our second pre-year anniversary.
Yes.
Because this is our third year anniversary of the Stephen Johnny right. Show version 2.0.
So our first third year anniversary was, are you sitting down?
1988.
40 years ago.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I can't even believe it.
I know.
Wow. Yeah.
Nope.
They roll us in here, prop us up. I can make a fist. They said, well, then you can open up your microphone
sure.
as long as you can make a fist.
Well, hi, kids.
Hi. And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And Ron, how did you bring in the new year?
I was snoring.
No, that's actually the noise we heard.
Well, yeah. We thought it was fireworks.
Well, I did wake up to see, it was like 11:30. I went to bed early and woke up at 11:30. And I said, well, I'm awake. I might as well turn on the rockin' New Year's Eve thing and see how that turns out. I'd like to see Chicago given some love. And I turned it on there, and they were in New York, and they were talking about New York, and then they were talking about New York, and then they talked about New York. And then they said, oh, let's check in with Chance the Rapper. And Chance the Rapper said, we're in Chicago. Back to you. And they said, we're in New York, and they did some more New York stuff. And
they went to Vegas, too.
And then they finally went for the count. Down. It was like about the countdown, and that was it. Back to you. And
objectively, and again, not just because we're all owned by Nexstar and we're a part of a WGN and Channel 9, we recorded and we're watching, skipping back and forth between all the stuff: Channel 32, Channel 7, Channel 5, Channel 9, and objectively, after Channel 7 wrapped up their New Year's Rockin' Eve in Chicago. We skipped over to Channel 9. The photography was wonderful. They did a good, I want to say it was about a 15-minute thing, just up and down the Chicago River with all of the. It was absolutely gorgeous. And it made us realize one of the things that makes Chicago's countdown unique. When you see countdowns from all over the world, there are fireworks out on the river, on the lake, on whatever. This is fireworks in between the canyons of buildings
Beautiful.
In Chicago, and it's spectacular.
Ron, did you see Barry Butler's picture of the fireworks over the river? Because he was in some vantage point where he was up high.
I put it up on my Facebook page, Ron.
So oh, no, I didn't see that, but I will take a look at it because he's just an incredible photographer.
Yeah. In fact, that picture is my screensaver because it's jaw-dropping. I've sent it to friends all around the country, and they're going, that's not AI. No, that's not AI.
Nope.
That's a case of the real thing.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like. And then we don't realize how special it is with the buildings as a backdrop because they're on barges, on water for safety reasons. We don't care. We just blow them up in the middle of the buildings.
And somebody posted that apparently there had been some drone thing that was scheduled for around the merchandise mart, and because of the weather, they didn't do that. Well, why would the weather affect drones? I'm not sure I understand, unless it was too foggy or something, or what?
I was a little perturbed with some of the reviews of what happened, because it was the first time. Things are going to be snafus.
Yeah.
And apparently, we heard when Ryan Seacrest said, I don't think Chance realizes he's on TV. Because he was like doing his thing with his family up on stage.
Yeah, just talking to his family. And it was like he was having a good time. I can say that. But I should have switched over to Channel 9 then. I'm sorry
and
I didn't.
I don't know if that is still available anyplace. But if it is, take a look at it.
I will.
And Andrea Darlis was over there. And
she did great. She's all cleaned up, all beautiful. And she and G were sampling drinks on a rooftop somewhere, which I thought, well, how come every time we did it, we didn't get to get all dressed up and stand on rooftops and drink drinks? And
I think it was, Channel 2 was doing the New Year's Eve in Nashville. Channel 5 was doing this fireworks around the world thing, which is actually kind of cool to see.
Yeah. Because I think Australia was the one that was so jaw-droppingly beautiful because it was all drone. I think we're going to eventually get to the point where it's going to be all drones.
Yeah. But, which I think is not a bad thing.
No.
And Julian, you said that you had a kind of a quiet New Year's Eve?
Yeah, the most exciting part of my New Year's Eve was Pictionary.
Pictionary?
Excuse me?
Yeah, Pictionary.
And, okay, what part of Pictionary was exciting?
Okay, so at the very end, you had to roll a specific number to win the game, and I rolled that specific number.
Oh.
And everyone cheered like it was the game-winning touchdown for the Bears. This is 30, people. Well, 31, but this is getting old.
That's great. I played more games of Uno in the past week. 9-year-old Joseph is big on board games. So we played Uno, and as we're playing our third or fourth game of Uno, he's saying, "So what are we playing next?" I'm like, "Okay." So then we went to Sorry, and then we went to Dinosaur Monopoly, and then back to Uno again.
But what's that card game that I love? You guys were playing it.
Humanity. Cards Against Humanity.
It's hilarious.
But we have the family version.
Yes, because there is a family version and there is an adult version.
But I will tell you, with the family version, we learned real quick, since the boy can read now, to kind of go through the cards real quick and pick out those that he won't even say the word diarrhea. So we had to go through and pull out about a dozen cards. But it's so much fun. We did that on Christmas night.
Yeah.
We did a round of that.
And our friend Anne, who didn't want to play it, she wound up reluctantly playing it.
Yes.
And she had a ball, and she won most.
She won. Yeah. Have you ever played Cards Against Humanity?
Oh, I love it.
Do you really?
Yeah.
You're playing the kids' version, right?
No. Do I look like a kid? Do I have enough gray in my beard?
No, I highly recommend it. If you've seen it, go for the kids' version if you want to play with younger than teens. And even those cards that we pulled out, it was, you know, the F word as in F-A-R-T. He doesn't want to say that, so we pulled those cards out too. I got to love it that he's not going, I want to say those words.
Speaking of the F word.
Oh, yes.
Well, there's a segue.
Yes.
A little later tonight. This is our third anniversary, version 2, so we thought we'd do something special. So along with the other guests that we're going to have, we're going to talk with our showbiz machino, Gino Salomon, and the publisher of Consumer Guide, Tom Appel, is going to be joining us later. But for how many years that we've been playing the closing song
by
Red Peters?
Since the beginning.
And we've said, you know, sometime we got to get him on the show. Tonight is that night.
It is the night.
And we have said that if you ever hear us play the entire closing song, it will be our last show.
Mm-hmm.
Keep listening.
Don't tease like that.
To them.
No, you're going to get people confused. Ron, you're usually at home and in bed by the time the closing song plays.
I am, yes.
So you'll get to hear it tonight.
Oh, excellent.
And the man behind it for three years that we've been playing, we've said, wonder if he realizes there's a lot of activity on his site come Sunday and Monday when people go to listen to the whole song, because we say you'll never hear it unless it's our swan song. So that's coming up tonight. And we're going to talk to our buddy Chino and recap some of the showbiz from 2025.
And also a little later, we're going to pay tribute to a man that sadly we lost on New Year's Eve. Just last week when we were talking with Bill Dahl about this great album of Chicago rockers from the 50s and 60s, and we played a little bit of Brown Eyed Handsome Man by Hayden Thompson. And sadly, Hayden Thompson left us on New Year's Eve. What a great guy. What a nice man.
He actually defined country gentleman.
Yes.
Because he was just that. He was such a gentleman, such a sweet soul, and so talented.
Yeah.
So, we will take some time and remember him tonight as well. One of my favorite things this time of the year, and it has been for 40 years. Again, I'm hung up on the year 40. The good folks over in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan.
Lake Superior State University.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, it was State College back when we would talk to
the day.
Bill Raby. I remember his name. He was the guy that started the banished words from the previous year.
And we had him on for so many years.
Yes.
Right around New Year's.
Right, right. And in fact, he would say, I look forward to sharing the important message that there are words that should not be beat up and used over and over again in the new year. So we got the list for this year. And Ron, if you're over in the newsroom and you got two minutes, you can hang out with us on this subject. Now, starting at 10, and we'll get up to the number one word that needs to be banished.
Okay.
And again, this started out as kind of a class assignment, as I recall, back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And then when the internet
just kind of
snowballed.
Got a life of its own.
In fact, they're the ones who did the snowball burning or the snowman burning.
Yes. It was all tied together.
Yeah. They did a snowman burning every January.
Because I'm looking at their website, and I think they used to have a different... Oh, no, they still have the snowman burning. I'll have to click on that and see what it is.
Because Bill has passed away, I believe. But this lives on, and it gets bigger and bigger every year. Yeah. I mean, thousands and thousands of submissions, because there's certain words that by the time we get to May or June, we're like, just stop it. I'm sick of that.
Okay, so let me get my important voice.
Banished word number 10.
Reach out. That's two words, I know. But the phrase, reach out. Apparently, we should stop using that when we mean that we're going to get in touch with somebody or we're going to be supportive of somebody. Just stop with the reach out nonsense.
Well, I've been saying that for years, and I think that was a kind of a corporate thing that started years ago.
Yeah.
And I thought, why aren't you just saying, I'm going to email, I'm going to call, I'm going to talk to.
I'm going to reach out. Yes, that's number 10.
Fine.
Number 9.
Wait.
Oh, okay.
I need my important
big voice.
Banished word and or phrase number 9.
My bad.
Yeah, that's kind of like a...
Yeah. It's kind of infantile.
Yeah, and I don't know. I've never liked it. It's been around since, I was a teenager.
Really?
People say, oh, it's my bad. It's my bad. I say, why don't you say it's my fault? It's
like, yeah, I know. Yeah. Or I'm sorry.
Why don't you say what you mean?
Just sorry.
Yes.
Your bad what?
Right.
Your bad decision? Your bad action?
My bad use of this word. My bad.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
Okay.
Banished word and or phrase number 8.
Gift. Or gifted as a verb. Now, this one apparently was chosen 32 years ago as a banished word. I don't get it.
I'm going to pile on this one.
Okay.
Because, as you know, anytime we watch a newscast, I just go, the news, broadcast news, has made anything with ing on the end of it a verb. Instead of saying, the president decided, it's the president deciding.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hang it on your nose.
Mm-hmm.
Just stop with that.
So
and apparently some consultant decided that they should do that. And I think gifted is the same kind of thing.
It's overused, overworked. Ready?
Okay. Well,
banished word and our phrase number 7.
Perfect.
I don't understand that one. What's wrong with perfect? It seems kind of perfect to me.
And we had a producer years ago.
Yes.
Anytime we would be talking about something, she would say,
perfect.
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 It
was just her.
It was just her.
Yeah. I'm going for coffee. Perfect.
Yeah.
We're going to get our next guest. Perfect.
I stumbled.
Like,
perfect.
Perfect. I'm in pain. Perfect.
All right. I can see how that could be annoying. Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
Banished word and or phrase number 6.
Full stop.
Yes.
Full
please.
Stop. Yeah. Please. Why not period? It's just a period. Put a period there. That's all. We don't need to full stop it.
Yeah. It's just to emphasize.
Yes.
But,
well, I think it's to be cool.
Yeah.
So we're saying full stop to full stop.
Yes. Absolutely.
Banished word and our phrase, number 5.
I hate this one. Incentivize.
Mm-hmm. Yep, nails on a chalkboard, no
doubt.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, you're motivating. You're inspiring. You don't have to incentivize.
It's like a corporate speak.
Exactly, Ron.
Yes.
Yes.
Ah, move on.
Banished word and our phrase number four.
Massive. Massive. That is so, so overused. Everything is massive. You know, I prefer ginormous.
Well, that's not overused, I'll tell you that.
Let's start using ginormous more.
You got it.
Right. Massive is kind of right up there with amazing. Everything's amazing.
Yeah. Amazing apparently made the list about 10 years ago, and it's there forever.
Banished word and our phrase number three.
Cooked, as in my brain feels cooked, or I'm cooked today.
It's never used in the context of, oh, I cooked this good thing.
Right. Or let's go cook some breakfast. No.
I'm cooked. I don't know that we ever heard it used in that way.
I know.
So I don't know if it's overused, but I'm okay with it going away.
Okay.
Before it gets that far.
Banished word and our phrase number two.
Demure. Back in the summer, that was a thing.
Yeah.
I think TikTok ran with the demure.
Who was it? Was there a song or something?
I think there was a song,
yes.
And then there were TikTok videos that people were doing to show how they were demure.
Julian, wasn't there a song to I'm positive there was a song.
Yeah, ask the young guy.
Yeah.
Hey, that's ageist.
Yeah.
No, it's a compliment.
Okay, as we get... Oh, and we have to wrap this up in 30 seconds.
And now, banished word and our phrase number one.
Living with a 9-year-old for a week, all I had to do was say 6-7 and he would start giggling. 6-7.
I just giggled when you said it.
Yes. And his dad.
And you're how old, Ron?
I'm 9 at heart, I guess, apparently.
His dad, Patrick Crispin, is 6-6, but he changed it to 6-7 just so he could see his kid giggle. Yes, that's your dad. 6-7. All 6-7 of him.
Yes, that should go away.
It took on a life. It really was crazy. Talk to teachers, they'll tell you. You don't even want to walk up to the blackboard and utter the number 6 and 7. We're talking with Showbiz Gino. Hi, Gino.
Hey, Gino. Hi, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Before we go any further, I have to ask, what were you doing? How did you celebrate New Year?
You know what? My girlfriend and I watched Heaven Can Wait, one of our favorite movies.
Yes.
And then Asleep by 9 o'clock, which is how my life has changed, and I'm happy about it.
Oh, come on.
9 o'clock? I mean, at least we made the midnight countdown, at least, at home on the couch, but we made the midnight countdown.
Yeah, and who was well-rested the next day? I was.
Yeah, this is true. But, you know, for people who follow you on Facebook, you've said it a number of times, and we've said it over the years when we've talked to you on the radio. You, in fact, have the best job in the world.
I have the greatest job, no question about it. And I still have it, which is even more stunning.
Even more stunning? All right. We wanted to talk to you tonight to recap 2025. And in the world of entertainment, it was really very good, wasn't it?
It was good, but it was also scary with the sale of Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a big deal.
Yes.
This is a big deal because so far Netflix says that they own it, but now the Ellisons are trying to have Paramount buy it. And the difference is that Netflix just wants the studio. They don't want the cable networks. They don't want HBO or CNN, excuse me. And, you know, Paramount wants all of it. So also Paramount has a lot of money behind it. So I'm curious to see if they'll be able to snatch it away from Netflix. Why I say it's scary is that Netflix doesn't care about theaters, and they're not going to want to put things in theaters, and that's not good.
Right.
What are you hearing from your showbiz friends, actors, singers? Are you hearing any particular feedback about leaning one way or another on this?
Yes, there's great concern about the future of theaters, and they would rather see Paramount buy it, because Paramount has maintained that they want to release movies in theaters, and Warner Brothers releases a lot of movies. So if that doesn't happen, what happens to all these theaters? Right now, there's a lack of product, and it's really kind of difficult for them. I can only imagine we'll lose a lot of theaters if that happens.
And a lot of jobs.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Already people have kind of lost jobs.
Because of mergers this past year, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And am I wrong, or are we at the very beginning of a swing back toward people going to theaters? I mean, people are now, there was a story came out about a week or two ago where people are again going to outdoor malls. Mm-hmm. And I think some theaters are starting to see a bit of a resurgence. But what are you hearing, if anything?
Well, they're still only 1% higher than they were last year in box office and still below pre-COVID numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, yeah. We start off on all the negative when there, in fact, is a lot of positive, especially in your world, because you were really hanging with the big showbiz people this past year. Let's start with December, and then we'll work our way back, because
okay,
in December, Dick Van Dyke,
yeah,
a true, yeah, just a legend, an icon, a wonderful human being, celebrated his 100th birthday. There's a documentary about Dick Van Dyke, and of all people to pop up in that documentary, you.
I don't know how that happened. I'm still trying to figure it out. It was such an honor because Dick Van Dyke is the man you want to be. He is such a good guy. He is universally loved, and he's just a kind soul, and still at 100, still vital, you know, and maybe it's his wife who's in his 50s that helps that happen.
Yeah.
Which I really do believe. She really keeps him young. But they sing. And when I was in his kitchen, he came dancing into the kitchen without shoes on. I mean, how does that happen? And it just shows what, you know, remember, he was a smoker, too, and had a drinking problem early in his career. But look at, he's still with us, and we're so lucky to have him.
Yes.
Am I correct? He always struck me as being the kind of guy that would be the same off the screen as he is on the screen.
Exactly. You're so right. And, you know, Tubi has been one of the most popular streaming services because it's free. And my girlfriend and I have been watching the new Dick Van Dyke Show, which was the show he did after Dick Van Dyke, set in Phoenix. He was able to convince CBS to do a show in Arizona. They taped it there, and he is who he was in the Dick Van Dyke Show, and who he was in Diagnosis Murder. He's always Dick Van Dyke, but doesn't matter. We love him.
I don't know how I missed that show, because I go from...
I highly recommend checking it out. Hope Lang played his wife.
It's what?
He's a host of a local TV show, and we're going through the episodes now, and just, it is, you hear, he says, honey, and you think, well, Laura Petrie's going to walk through, and it's Hope Lang as his wife.
Wow.
I have a vague memory of that, but we're going to have to seek that out.
Yeah, I do not remember that. I remember him, in my mind, he jumped from comedy, sitcom, television, to more serious characters. So,
right. But yet always still Dick Van Dyke, right? I mean, the voice doesn't change. You know, he's always kind. It's rare to see him step outside of that.
So did you make the T-shirt that you're seeing in, the Dick Van Dyke fan club T-shirt?
No, I did not. But his wife, Arlene, is really something special and really amazing. And she had someone do that. And, you know, I wear that shirt with pride.
Yeah.
It's the drawing he did of himself, the cartoon he did of himself.
Wow. Wow. And, of course, in a white T-shirt, you can show off your slimmed down body. That's the point, right?
71 pounds, Stephen Johnny.
How much?
71.
Whoa.
When I look like Elvis before he met his demise.
You lost basically a 7-year-old.
Yeah, I know.
Good for you.
And believe me, I feel great. All my numbers are great. My doctor scared me to death. And I 3 years ago, I started eating a keto diet and dropped 51 pounds. And then my blood sugar still wasn't low enough, so I went on Mounjaro, and then dropped another 20. But now all my levels are normal, and I feel the best I've ever felt.
Wow. That is a great way to start the new year.
Good for you.
I would say so.
That's an inspirational testimony there.
And I will tell you that on New Year's Eve, I keep mentioning her, but my girlfriend and I made pasta. It was the first pasta I had in 3 years.
Oh, my
gosh.
And it
was delicious.
That's why you went to bed at 9 o'clock. You carbo-loaded and passed out.
I was on a carb high.
Yes.
Okay, I have to ask, after 3 years, what kind of pasta did you have a craving for after 3 years?
You know what? I wanted angel hair, but we made a bow tie pasta with lemon and peas. Oh, boy.
Sounds good.
We're talking with Gino Salamone, and people who are new to us may not know the legend that is Gino Salamone. So for people who don't know, who the heck are you, what do you do, and where can people find you?
Okay, I work for Fox 6 WIPI in Milwaukee, and a lot of my stuff goes on my YouTube channel, which is Watch Gino TV. And in fact, we're going to get to a movie called Song Song Blue.
Mm-hmm.
What you don't know about this story is that in 1997, I hired that couple to perform at my birthday party. And I put the video up of them performing. And in like 2 weeks, already 30,000 views of people who wanted to see the real couple.
Wow. Well, we're going to talk a whole lot about that movie in just a little bit.
And again, your YouTube channel is?
Watch Gino TV.
Okay. And the other places people can find you?
You know what? I am everywhere. I'm on Facebook, Gino Salamone.
He's everywhere. He's everywhere.
In fact, there's something else we're going to talk about that I'll put a photo up so people can see what we're talking about. But yes, Gino Salamone Critic. And you don't even have to ask. You can just sign on and follow me.
Yeah, follow you. Yes. I want to take us back to, I believe it was like November, early November. You were in Chicago for a documentary on Siskel and Ebert, movie critics.
It was not a documentary about Siskel and Ebert. It was an anniversary of Siskel and Ebert.
Right.
And it was at the Chicago Cultural Center. And it was a 50-year celebration. And they had a live performance, two actors doing Gene and Roger, that blew my mind, especially the Roger guy. You thought you were watching Siskel and Ebert. That's how entertaining they were.
Wow.
Yeah, Chaz Ebert was there and Marlene Siskel was there. And it was just an amazing, amazing day. I was so honored to be there and watch this performance and then the roundtable.
And you sent us an email with some information on something interesting that is being proposed for Chicago. And you have a question or three, so lay it on us.
Yes, I'm relying on you and your visitors. So there's a rendering of a statue of Siskel and Ebert. Now, there's one of Roger in Southern Illinois, but there's nothing honoring Gene and Roger in Chicago. And you've seen the rendering. It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
It's them standing with giving the thumbs up, and then there are two theater seats where people can, you know, do a selfie and take a look at, take that important social media photo that shows you're in Chicago. But finding a location has been a real effort. And here's the issue. So the Parks Commission, if you do it with the city of Chicago, they want to pick the artist and they want to, you know, be in charge of it. Well, we have an artist, Preston Jackson. He did the Richard Pryor statue in Peoria, Illinois, which looks exactly like Richard.
Mm-hmm.
So we need somewhere with a private property. And, you know, all the families are on board. There was talk of having it at Navy Pier, but then they were reconfiguring their space. Pioneer Plaza, they've got the Jack Brickhouse statue, but they want a revenue stream, and it becomes really difficult. So where is the place? We've got, we're going to be raising the funds. TCM is going to help us out, and there's a fiscal sponsor. So the issue is finding the right location, and I don't know Chicago like you two know Chicago, and like your audience knows it. So,
well, we have looked at the rendering you sent us. Our patio has room.
Yes.
Do you really want people coming through?
Yes.
And if they came through, not only could they see the Siskel and Ebert display, but we have our Walk of Fame plaques.
That's right.
So it would
really?
Be, we
they
do.
Could, they could step over those on the way.
When WGN moved from the Tribune Tower and when the new owners were tearing everything up, we all got our Walk of Fame plaques.
Oh, that is great. I love it. I'm so glad. Now I'm going to make a pilgrimage to your house.
They're stepping stones in our garden. To Steve's dismay, he's like, how come mine has weeds all around it and yours looks good? Yeah. So can I post a picture that you sent us of the concept of the E. Britton Siskel? Because it's really fabulous, because you have two theater seats in front where people could come and sit in front of them and have their picture taken.
Okay, so let's really break this down. So you're saying that because of various restraints from the city of Chicago or whoever, you need some private property.
That's right.
Be accessible for people to come and look at this.
Exactly.
Wow.
That's right. And it would be great if it was in downtown Chicago. I love the Navy Pier idea, but unfortunately it doesn't look like that's going to work out. But where is the spot? You know, where is that office building or that plaza that is privately owned that we could put this this statue?
Hmm.
Yeah, that's because I immediately thought Pioneer Court, but you're right. That would be too cluttered. Gosh,
I love Pioneer Court. But
I do too.
Yeah.
But again, you're right. When you're looking at private property, you have to be prepared for the fact that it's going to generate a lot of foot traffic.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. And you know, there's that one of Cup too, or Cup is it?
That's right.
That statue. So you know, it's not unprecedented, and Siskel and Ebert, you know, film criticism would not be what it is, and everybody's a film critic now. Why? Because they led the way. They showed people how to do it.
And if you went to their former broadcast homes, Channel 11,
and that's kind of a residential neighborhood.
Yeah, see, that's the issue. And you know, you also need a lot of, we talked about a theater where they, you know, Music Box Theater, but that's just a sidewalk, and that's just not enough room to put this.
Okay.
So
well,
if your listeners have an idea, please let me know.
We'll post it on our Facebook page, and we'll also do a blog and post the picture, because I love the rendering. It is very, cool. And it's kind of like was it Bob Newhart where you had the opportunity to sit down
next to Bob?
It's that kind of a thing, only it's they're standing behind the seats. You get to sit in the seats. It's a really cool idea.
And
the Newhart one is in town. And, you know, Newhart wasn't a real character. they're doing his character from the show.
Yeah.
These were two real people who worked in Chicago and stayed in Chicago.
And as I look at the picture of the statue, I'm thinking, thank goodness the artist that did the Lucille Ball statue, maybe one of the most terrifying statues ever.
All you have to do is look up Lucille Ball statue, and you will see this horrendous thing. Now, the woman who's in charge of this, who's making this happen, found an artist, and she specifically wanted to make sure that that would not happen, that there would be no repeat, and that, you know, this artist, Preston Jackson, when you look at that Richard Pryor statue in Peoria,
that's wonderful.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It looks like him, which is kind of the point, right?
I just posted the picture on the Steve and Johnny Show page, and I wrote, the Siskel and Ebert statue concept, private property that can stand foot traffic as needed, any ideas? So we'll see what people come up with. And maybe, you know, somebody who owns some corporate building downtown says, well, we would love to have it in our...
But wait a minute. Maybe going along with the Chicago Bears, maybe we want it in Arlington Heights or maybe in Indiana. I mean, you know, there are options within our listening radius.
That can't happen, can it? I mean, I know there's talk of it. There's no way, right?
Well, they have been to Hammond, Indiana, looking around. And Hammond is, you know, so close and easily accessible, so who knows?
So a listener says, do a suburb Morton Arboretum. They do statues all the time. That's true. That's kind of a hall, though, for people, and doesn't really tie in with who they are. It'd be great.
Right. And you want people who are coming to downtown Chicago, who are tourists, who say, okay, Siskel and Ebert are Chicago. Where is that statue? I've got to go to it. You know, we have the Bronze Fonz here. In Milwaukee, and it's a tourist stop all the time. Ron Howard finished a movie in Chicago, drove up here with his wife to take a picture with the Bronze Fonz statue. And we even have a statue of a professional wrestler in South Milwaukee, Da Crusher, D-A Crusher.
Yeah, oh, the Crusher? Yeah.
Yes. There's a life-size statue of him in South Milwaukee.
Oh, how cool. Like,
was he from Milwaukee?
He was from Milwaukee, and his big thing, he always said that he trained by carrying a quarter barrel on his shoulder. So in this statue, the Crusher has a quarter barrel on his shoulder.
Oh, that's cool.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And didn't he have some legendary matches with, was it Dick the Bruiser?
Dick the Bruiser, they claim to be cousins, like in pro wrestling. Yeah. The relatives aren't really, but they were the World Tag Team Champions together, the Crusher and the Bruiser.
And if I recall, they beat the Lasowski brothers to win the title.
Well, actually, the Crusher's name is Reggie Lasowski, and he wrestled as the Lasowski brothers for a while. So,
oh, that's right. He was the same guy.
Wait, who kidnapped my husband? Why are you talking about wrestling? I'm looking at him like, what?
Well, again, when I was growing up, watching Wrestling from Marigold on Channel 9 Saturday night, Vern Gagne, it's an interview during the intermission, and outside the ring, laying down on the concrete, Vern Gagne starts flexing his stomach muscles and bouncing off the concrete by flexing his stomach muscles.
That was not a trick.
I love that.
I'm going to signal for a turn here, and there is a movie called Song Sung Blue, which is not a Neil Diamond biography.
Right.
But it is a movie about a couple up in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Who performed, well, for Gino, you want to share the rest of it with us?
Sure. They performed together. They had a Neil Diamond tribute show. And the husband, Mike Sardina, did Neil Diamond. And then Claire, his wife, would do Patsy Cline and other female singers. And they would perform at State Fair at the side stages. And, they got a following around the city. There was a documentary done about them called Song Sung Blue, which you can see for free on YouTube.
That was back in 08, wasn't it, Gino?
Right, right. And then Craig Brewer, the writer-director of the film, based what he saw, he told the story of what he saw in that documentary, and Hugh Jackman got involved, loved the idea, really inspired by the story, and then he saw Kate Hudson on CBS Sunday Morning and said, she would be perfect, and she is perfect. She's really good. Yeah.
Well, it was back in September. In September when we first heard about the movie through you, when you said this movie is going to come out because you knew the couple. In fact, they had performed at one of your birthday parties, right?
Yes, exactly. And that's, if you go to that YouTube page of mine, you will see the couple that doing the songs. They did a couple songs, and I put them up on YouTube, and Hugh Jackman could not believe that I hired them for my birthday party.
Now,
and, Jim Belushi is also in the movie, and then he plays their booker, and he was stunned. I interviewed the two of them in New York, and he said that that Claire is his sister. That she's a Chicago girl. His sister is exactly like Claire. That's why he felt such an affection for this project.
Now, Thunder and Lightning was the duo's name as they performed all over Milwaukee for years. Mike has since passed away, right?
Yes, he has. And that's how the version of what happens in the movie, spoiler alert, is a little different from what happened in reality. There are a few things that are different, but, not a great deal different.
Well,
there was a legendary performance, which you see in the documentary. Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam was playing Summerfest, sold-out show. He was walking the grounds of Summerfest and saw Lightning and Thunder on a side stage, and he invited them to come up, and they did Forever in Blue Jeans in front of a Pearl Jam crowd, and Eddie sang with them. And it's amazing. And it's in the movie. Kind of a different version. Mm-hmm. It said that they were performing a sold-out show at a theater, and Eddie heard about it, and he called them and asked them to open for Pearl Jam, which is not what happened.
Right, right.
But that's okay. That's a minor thing.
Speaking of things that aren't setting well with some folks, Mike's son, who's 41 years old, has gotten a bit of press in the past few days because he says he's very unhappy with the movie, that his dad is probably rolling over in his grave. He says he even used the word monsters. He says they're monsters.
Right.
What do you hear about this?
Well, My read on it is someone who is not happy that he wasn't involved more with the production of it. I think Mike would have been thrilled that Hugh Jackman is playing him on screen and that it's an inspirational story. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's about mm-hmm. pursuing your dreams and going after your dreams. And the only one who should judge is Claire mm-hmm. because she lived this story. And Claire has been in New York, has been, you know, we did a premiere here in Milwaukee that Hugh Jackman was at. And she's having the time of her life. She is thrilled and so proud of the movie. She had 70 family members at the screening here in Milwaukee, and there were a lot of sniffles and tears watching this story be told.
Now,
you know, I wasn't that surprised to hear that his son wasn't enamored of the movie, because I haven't watched all of it, but I have watched some of the original documentary, and it
yes.
certainly seems like it was, to say the least, a rather dysfunctional family.
Absolutely, and, you know, it was a warts and all documentary. I think the feature film is much kinder and, you know, doesn't get into that as much. But, you know, Mike was a recovering alcoholic, and he's mm-hmm. so proud of that, a Vietnam vet. And, you know, those things have to be talked about. And he always was so proud that with all these struggles, they were out there entertaining people. And that's what this movie is. I think people that see it will really like it, because it is a feel-good story, and it is about pursuing your dreams.
And you see it popping up at the awards?
Well, right now, Kate Hudson's been nominated for a Golden Globe, mm-hmm. and I think she's going to—I really believe she's going to be nominated for an Academy Award. Hugh has not been nominated. And I have to tell you something. Hugh has sold this show, this movie. He has worked so hard at
yep.
getting word out about this. What he did in Milwaukee was stunning to me. He did not rest. He went to Cops Custard on the south side of Milwaukee.
Oh.
Over 1,000 people lined up to get Song Sung Blueberry Custard. And he was behind the counter giving out these cones of custard. And he gave everybody their moment, you know.
Wow.
They said, no photos. No, he took time, took a photo with everyone. Then they went to a school and donated instruments. He was everywhere, did the premiere, did a blue carpet. And actually, I was in charge of finding the blue carpet. Chicago was trying to really put it to us. They wanted $4,000 for a blue carpet. I got it for $400 here in Milwaukee.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not kidding you.
Wow.
Jackman just seems like a really cool guy. Any of the interviews we've seen on TV.
Oh, him and Colbert were priceless.
That was wonderful.
When they started singing a cappella, oh, my gosh.
Right. But I honestly, I've never seen a nicer person. And, you know, I introduced him on stage before the premiere, and he said some nice things about me, like, you, nobody cares about that. You are too, you don't have to be that kind. Please. And then the day after the premiere, he wanted to surprise me, and he came to the station, and we had him live on the station on our show at 10 a.m.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to segue for a second, but
sure.
Sticking with warts and all documentaries,
yeah.
What's your take on the Chevy Chase documentary?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, because Chevy, there's a word that people use for Chevy that we don't use on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I had the best of Chevy, and I had the worst of Chevy, meaning we were doing Las Vegas Vacation interviews, and I said, you know, you're a great reactor. And he said, well, that's because you have people like Julius Sweeney to react off of. And I said, well, that's one of my best friends, and I can't thank you enough for saying that. I was really touched, and he was great. The next time I interviewed him, I said, you know, last time you said something so nice about my friend Julia Sweeney, and he said, is she dead yet? Yeah. And I was stunned. And, you know, I was surprised. Beverly D'Angelo did the documentary, Dan Aykroyd did the documentary, Paul Schaefer, but there are a lot of people who would not do the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's the whole story with Community, the show on NBC that he basically got fired off of or using an inappropriate word with a cast member.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't understand. I know he's trying to be funny. The only good thing I can say about him is how he treats his daughters and his wife. But otherwise, he has a really strange sense of humor. And, you know, he did it with the director. The director's asking him questions, and he said, I don't think you're smart enough to really figure out who I am.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
That's in the documentary.
He's yeah. one of the few people that anytime his name came up among showbiz people that we know, they had yeah. negative things to say about
it. Or they would roll their eyes yeah. like, oh, right. yeah, I've got
well,
stories.
Here's the other thing. Let's look at the 50th anniversary of SNL that took
yep.
place last year.
Yep.
They'd never used him.
That's
they,
right.
They yep. never put him on.
That's right. And I guess yeah. there's a part of the documentary where they repeat that horrible quote-unquote joke from Saturday Night Live when the yes. first gay cast member, Terry Sweeney, mm-hmm. was
right.
hired.
Right.
And he basically, and this was during the whole AIDS
yep.
crisis,
yep.
and he said to him, so we could always talk about you having AIDS and we could weigh you every week. And yeah. now Bill Murray is yeah. saying that that's a lie. He never said those things.
You mean Chevy?
Oh, Chevy. Oh, listen, I'm thinking about Bill Murray's reaction right. to him, too. I'm like, right. oh, okay.
No, you know what? He conveniently has a lapse of memory on a lot of things. Now, I know he had he was in a coma, in a medically induced
right.
coma for a week, and he came out of it not remembering a lot of things. Well, I think he conveniently forgot what he said because everyone else said that he said it, including mm-hmm. Terry Sweeney, who would not be interviewed for the documentary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Now, well, universally, if you bring his name up, people do not like Chevy Chase.
Yeah. 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 So when you look back on 2025, what's the strongest memories that pop into your head?
I would say the Dick Van Dyke documentary and
yeah.
the fact that he made it to 100 because, you know, the same plan was in effect for Betty White, and sadly,
right.
yeah.
the movie was released and she was gone. Had a great interview with George Clooney about J. Kelly, just mm-hmm. really enjoyed talking to him. That was a highlight. And the whole Song Sung Blue thing, seeing Claire being paid tribute and enjoying every second of it, and the kindness of Hugh Jackman. That's what stands out to me.
Really neat. You had a great yeah. year, because I follow you, and I'm exhausted more often than not, because you're hopping another plane, going another place. And folks who are not familiar with your work can go to YouTube, Watching Geno TV. And
Watch Geno TV.
Watch.
Well, just
watch. I'm sorry. Yeah, oh, my gosh. No,
that's why we have separate checkbooks, Geno.
Oh, stop it. I can't read my own handwriting, so you have to forgive me.
Well, neither can I, so
we're even.
And I don't want to sound like the schmaltzy showbiz guy, but I got to say, I love you guys, and any chance I have to talk to you always makes me happy.
Well,
back at you, Geno.
Absolutely. We've got to go to lunch.
And when are you going to be back in Chicago? Because we got to get you in the studio sometime. You've never seen this studio, have you?
I have not. No.
Let's take care of that in 2026.
You almost said 2028.
Yeah.
When I helped drop the Siskel and Ebert statue, unbeknownst to anybody in the city of Chicago, and it just turns up in,
yeah.
in Pioneer Plaza, then I'll come up there.
Okay.
Deal. Thank you, Geno. Always a
Thank
pleasure.
You. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Geno. Remind me a little later, or maybe in this segment, I want to just go over some of the things that popped up on our blog just within the past week. But if you haven't checked out our blog, just go to steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. We would love it if you would subscribe. There's no fee. We don't spam you. You just get an email anytime we do a new blog post. But I'm always amazed at some of the people from different countries that are checking out our blog. And in the past week, it's been the United States, of course, India, Mexico, Sweden, Canada, Singapore, Ireland.
What?
Hong Kong, SAR, China, United Kingdom, and Vietnam. And those are some of the countries from the past week that have been checking out our blog. And thank you so much for doing that.
That just blows me away. I mean, you have to forgive me. I'm trying to bring... I'm like, China? Really?
I I always forget. What does SAR stand for? I should know that, and I always forget it. Hong Kong, SAR, China.
I don't know.
Julian, that's your assignment.
Yeah, work on that. Okay. Many people at 312-981-7200 are wishing us a happy second, third anniversary. Like George Clemens. George, thank you for your sweet words. He's in Augusta, Georgia, and he's here every Saturday night, as is Sherry Hanrahan in Romeoville. And Dean is in Indy. Mike is in Elmwood Park. Also, Sherry's in Bolingbrook. Jim is in Richmond, Wisconsin, listening. Bonnie and George are listening over the internet from Scottsdale. Scott's in South Dakota. JW and Dolly Mink are on board in Chesapeake, Virginia, sending happy anniversary wishes from Naples, Florida. Thank you much. 239 area code. Oh, I love this text from a listener. It says, we are 356 days until Christmas, and some people have their Christmas trees and lights up already.
Good heavens.
I know.
How could that happen?
David Shine wishes us a happy anniversary in 2026. He's in Mount Prospect. Long Beach, New York is tuned in tonight. And I said, too, I think that's our first New York listener.
I think it just may be.
Yeah. Bing Besh is in Winfield.
Bing Besh. Hey, Bing.
Mark Lindsay out in the Fox Valley. Also listening tonight is Laura and her fur baby Cotton are tuned in. Stacy Drager is out in Algonquin, and she's often with us on Saturday nights. Let me see who else I got here. Peter Lawrence is in Sauk Village, and I'm going to roll through some of these on our Facebook page. Debbie Hardiman made me laugh out loud. She says, get the duck out of here. I'll eat my shirt if you play the closing song without bleeping all those F-bombs. Listing from Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Well, all I'm going to say is we're going to play a part of the closing song you have never heard before.
That's right.
Will be played tonight.
And that's coming up in the next hour. Jim Smith is listening. He says, with the new year comes new batteries and my vintage 78 Panasonic transistor radio.
Great radio.
I love that. He's on the northwest side of Chicago. Peter Jacobowitz is in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin, listening on his CC Radio 2E. Brian Lefevre is tuned in from Bridgeport. I always say, thank goodness somebody from Chicago's listening.
Yes.
The Selke Scott families are listening, and the Bishop family tuned in from Arizona, Streamwood, and Schaumburg. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah, Georgia, where it's apparently been very, very rainy. Chuck Snitchler is our buddy who's now in Valpo, listening on his Amazon Echo.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Goldstein is in Owings Mills, Maryland.
The home of Motorweek TV and our friend John Davis.
Which reminds me, now that we're into a new year,
well, we got to get John back.
The auto show will be coming up in a month, and so we'll get John back on the radio.
And by the way, my weather forecast for the auto show, Valentine's Day weekend auto show, will be a snow blizzard.
It will be a blizzard. Yep. Always is. Judy B is listening, and she said, I'm looking forward to Red Peter. So she is apparently with us all night on Saturday. She's out in Oak Lawn. Diane Vasquez is our graphics guru. She's in Merrillville, Indiana. Thank you, Diane, for the adorable graphics. Dorothy Orsini, she and her dog River are listening in West Allis, Wisconsin. Nancy Hollins is tuned in. Lloyd Moncrief is in Ottawa. Susan Schimmel is in Glen Ellen. Margaret McCaslin is listening on her AM clock radio, as is our buddy Bobby Danos out in Sammich.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn Kinzer's in San Antonio, Florida. Linda Moeller is in the Oklahoma Panhandle. Robin Aiken's in Port Charlotte, Florida. Mary Gold is tuned in with her hubby in Tinley Park. I should mention, a couple of listeners said, are you in Florida? No, we're not. That's not going to happen for a couple of weeks.
Right.
Carrie Johnson is in Palm Coast, Florida. That's another one. Terry Brock is in Bridgeview. Joan Bloom is in Greenville, South Carolina. Roger Camp is in Athens, Ohio. Joan Smith in Holland, Michigan. We're getting out there tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this is cool. Sharon Wilson is tuned in. Mark Schroeder is listening. Erica Baum sent us a great picture from Wells Beach, Maine. It's the sunrise over the ocean beginning the new year 2026.
Yeah, that's a really nice picture. Thank you, Erica.
Cynthia Vineyard is, that's a great name, Vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to have a wine. She's in Darien, Illinois. Bonnie Pearson is in Grays Lake. Helen Thomas is in Kenosha, listening on her Amazon device. Beverly Goodall is tuned in. And by the way, Beverly, thank you for the Christmas card. I really appreciate it. She's in Highwood. Carrie Hunt is in Ruskin, Florida. We got about a half dozen different cities in Florida tuned in tonight. Sharon Malone is in K-Town, Roy Phillips in Northwest Illinois, Greg Borgman and Janice Kuratobi is in Wisconsin, Carrie Carlson has an adorable little graphic for us, thank you. Scott Cooper's in Naperville, Phyllis Gilbert Steak is in Joliet, and if I missed you, I'll catch you next week.
And let me go back to the blog for a second. A couple people checking in on our blog. Want to say hi to Debbie Tusick, who says I will be listening from Sammich on my phone. And Gene Jacobson says I will be listening from Milwaukee on my Sea Crane radio. Sounds like a great show as usual.
And
thank you, Gene.
A listener from Chicago 312 area code says that in China, those letters, it was S-A-R?
S-A-R.
Administrative. It's similar to, but not exactly like Hong Kong. Okay. Thank you for that information. Ken Fallett checked in from Ann Arbor. Also, Chris Chase is in Wheaton in Pittsburgh. I think that's the first for Pittsburgh. Janet Rogala checked in. And Ronald Bruce is listening in Tinley Park. Here's another one. S-A-R China means Special Administrative Region, specifically Hong Kong and Macau.
Okay.
Special Administrative Region, S-A-R.
Well, then we've learned something tonight.
Yeah, we sure have. So thank you, listeners. Appreciate that.
And since we have a couple seconds, very quickly, I said I might mention some of the things that showed up on our blog this week. Our January 3rd game plan with some pictures and podcast from December 27th. And we had some New Year's reflections with pictures of past New Year's.
Yes, a couple of people said they really, really love that retrospective.
And Dr. Crispin's December 27th show notes with a picture of Joseph.
Yes, that's right.
And that's all you need to know.
That's right.
And for those of you who don't know, who aren't with us till we wrap up our show, for
3 years.
3 years. We have been using the closing song by Red Peters as our last song before we go to our last caller. And for many weeks during that 3 year period,
months,
we have said, you know, sometime we got to talk to that Red Peters guy.
So tonight, we're going to talk to that Red Peters guy. Hey, Red.
Hey, how you doing?
You sound just like you do on the song.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
I recognize that song.
Thanks for joining us, because it has been a standing joke, literally. We're celebrating our three-year, or the second time we've been here for 3 years on WGN. And every time we play the song, we laugh, because we always say, Red, we always say, if you hear the whole song, it means we're never coming back. It's our swan song, right?
Yeah.
Well, you have an extraordinary career, and thank you so much for joining us.
That's my pleasure.
You have been involved with radio and TV. Some people may recognize you from Sirius XM or Howard Stern, or some of your work with any of a number of performers. You're having a whole lot of fun, aren't you?
I sure have. You know, I my main background has been in as a music producer for, you know, commercial, more like commercial music, and that could mean background music in a TV show or a TV show theme, or a film score, or a jingle. You know, all that kind of things, and that's where Red Peters was born. You know, would be in like a corporate environment and, you know, uptight clients and that sort of thing. And we'd record, you know, they'd come in for the lead vocal or whatever. I would put on a show for them. And once they left, it was like, yeah, okay, yeah, you too. See you later. And then as soon as they left, that's when the fun began, because we'd either change the, you know, the words to the song and fool around, and we just had a great time. And next thing you know, out of one of those jobs and one of those uptight situations, one of my, well, the first song I ever wrote as Red Peters popped out just one day. It was written like in 10 minutes.
And
yeah, it's been a long trip.
over 50 years. Does that kind of freak you out when you think about that? You're a young man in his 20s, and you just hit the ground. Well, let's take you back to when you were 16, 17 years old, and they would say to you, Red, what do you want to be when you grow up? Did you always feel that you wanted to be in some form of entertainment?
Well, you know, I enjoyed the various artists that I'd see on Ed Sullivan and those type of shows, Mike Douglas. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd see these different musical acts come on. And I always enjoyed that. And I was always a big listener as a teenager to all the radio shows that played the hip music of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was sort of like a science nerd. So I thought probably I'd go into science or be a veterinarian or something. But mm-hmm. then I, you know, bumped into some guys, also began to enjoy girls. And my path suddenly took a right turn or a left turn, depending on. You know, it just, I got into the music business. I went to art school, and when I get into meet the guys, it was right during the hippie days, 1968, 1969, and, you know, I formed a band then called GNP, Gross National Productions. Mm-hmm. It was sort of like a theater rock comedy. We did bits. You know, we had songs from all different genres, big band, country and western, you know, classic country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then would rock out at the end. And it was more of a fun, real fun show. And that just continued the journey. And it went on and on and on and on, and here I am now.
Was there a moment? I mean, it's one thing to enjoy music. It's one thing to think, oh, that'd be fun to do. But was there a performance, a moment, a recording session, whatever, when you felt really comfortable and said, yeah, this is where I'm going to be. This is what I'm going to do. I'm a performer. I love being on stage. I love creating. What was
I'd say,
there?
Yeah, I'd say about 1984 when I had my first jukebox hit. I really can't say the name over the year. But, you know, if people go to redpeters.com, they can hear all my songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there's the day that we created that song, we were doing a project, I think, for Converse Shoes. And I walked into the music director and my producer, Eddie Granga, and I said, Ed, I keep having this song over and over in my mind. So we wrote it, as I said earlier, in 10 minutes.
Hmm.
And we recorded a scratch track of it at that exact time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear that. I believe it's in maybe Fun Stuff or something like that on the Red Peters website. But, you know, I mean, we were just lucky then, because the next song I didn't write was until 1990, I think, called How's Your Whole Family? Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that song?
Yep.
And that's sort of like a country swing number. And that's, you know, been very popular. I'm sorry.
Let me recommend that everybody should go to redpeters.com, and you have to check out the Red Peters YouTube channel. And one of the fun things, I love listening to the songs, but also just reading the titles is enough to crank you up. It's some wonderful stuff.
But every time we say redpeters.com, I have to chuckle because every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1:45, 1:50, we say, go to redpeters.com and you can listen to the whole show. And I always, either I say it or I think it.
Or listen to the whole song.
Yeah, listen to the whole song.
Because we only play the little bit you heard.
But I have visions of Red, you going, well, how come I have all this traffic here on a Monday?
Well, you know, it seems You know, I've had success in Chicago. You know, when the first album came out, I think I could say the title. I laughed, I cried, I fudged my undies. you know, this when Man Cow was morning radio.
Of course.
You know, I was on his show a lot, and you know, so I had a good following in Chicago. As a matter of fact, the whole Midwest. You know, Michigan, Cleveland. I don't have a map in front of me, but at least I remember those two. In addition to Chicago,
you had a great run on Sirius XM too for quite a few years, didn't you?
Yes. When I I used to go on Howard. He enjoyed my songs, and you know, either if I had a new song, he wanted me to come in and sing one of the songs, or whatever. And when he went to Sirius, we had written this song. Was sort of a censorship type song. We bleeped all the words and you know most of the words in the song because they were all filthy, and so that was how it was meant to be. But when he went to Sirius, he was at K Rock in New York.
Right.
He played the song for you know almost a month. Just nonstop around the clock before he switched, you know, till January 6th, 2006. I think he went live. But along the way, he one day said, "Oh, you know, I want people. Anyone has any good ideas for a show? You know, submit them." So I submitted a one sheet, and like 2 days later, it was approved. Now I've been a guest on radio shows, but I've never had my own radio show. And here I am, I get approved for a 1 hour special every 2 weeks on the Howard channels. So I sort of had to learn fast. And you know, to give you an example, if I had in an hour, say 8 minutes of me talking. In the beginning, I think it took me maybe 7 hours to get good takes because I had never done it before. So after, you know, I had to learn fast. So, you know, I learned Pro Tools, and next thing you know, I'm producing the whole show, setting up the guests, doing the interviews, doing the research, doing the promotion. And it was quite a learning experience.
Yeah.
I have to ask you, because there are a lot of comedians that their whole shtick is dropping the F-bomb or whatever.
Yeah.
But to me, there is a real art to doing it. The F-bomb or expletives in and of themselves are not funny and can be just an excuse.
Yeah, I've heard exactly what you're talking about.
To me, and I'll give you an example, one of the funniest movies I've ever seen is Slapshot. I absolutely love that. There is an art to using expletives and making them funny. Did you have to wrestle with that for a while? Because you're a master at it.
Well, you know, and that for this song was really meant to function. You know, it sort of had a purpose, and we were thinking along the lines of like a happy birthday type song that would function, you know, as a tool and played over and over. And it actually came true that bar rooms and clubs and even some high end joints. Close every night with that song. And of course, I can just imagine, like, when my daughter was in college, like, the phone rang at like 1:30 in the morning, and I see her name, and I'm going, oh, Jesus. Aurora, what? What's going on? She goes, of course, it was college age, so they were hammered. and then she's going, Chad, Chad. They're playing your song. And so I hear in the background, you know, and she turns to the DJ and she goes, that's my father. That's my father.
That's
and
the best.
Going, yeah, right.
Yeah sure.
You know, so.
Oh, that's great.
It does function well. The thing about it is, you know, it's finely crafted, but we use, like, on the horns, we use, like, some of the best horn players in Boston, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they went to Berkeley, they played in the Boston Pops, Boston Symphony Orchestra, and they loved recording on it. You know, it had them a chance to really sort of
stretch.
Let loose.
Yeah.
You know? And so, but it's like the best players. If you listen to the horns.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everyone is right in the groove.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I'm not just smoking you, but you've got a great voice.
You do.
That's what people say. You know, I mean, when I had my first group, I would sing like regular songs. Some of them were, you know, were funny, but I did the love song route and everything. But you know, as we know, you're swimming in a pool of billions of people or millions of people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for you to cut through that is almost impossible. And so I wasn't trying to set out to be, you know, like some of my songs are filthy and others are just like double entendre or, you know, clever, like the Ballad of a Dog Named Staines. you ain't getting bleep for Christmas.
Yep.
And holy bleep, it's Christmas.
Yep.
You know, those we spent some serious time on, although they're funny and, you know, they paint a certain picture. To get at that point, the first song took 10 minutes to write and, you know, probably 15 more minutes to record, you know, my original song. But these songs can take months to write and create, get it so that it has a beginning, middle, and end, it has a good story. You know, it takes advantage of, you can lead the people, you know, lead the listener down this path.
Yeah.
Right.
You knowing that when they take the next corner, they're going to get hit with something, you know.
Oh, golly.
Yeah.
Steve is doing the same thing. We're both laughing because I'm just rehashing the 3 years of saying, remember, if you hear the whole song, and now people know why we say that, the people who didn't go to redpeters.com.
Well, people heard it.
Yes.
When I talked to Julian, I said, you know, he explained to me the song, and you only could play so much. And I did have a bleeped version.
Right.
So I said, you know, I sent it over.
And thank you for doing that.
Yes, thank you.
Well, you know, maybe you can get some more mileage out of it, you know.
But even with the bleeps, I crack up. It's
it's one of those type of songs. You get the idea, and you get the whole idea.
Exactly.
You know, people get the heck out of here, you know.
Any chance you're going to be coming to Chicago at some time in the future?
I don't have any plans right now. You know, I'm just mostly recording right now. I don't know if you heard my new Christmas song.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, people can find that. Go to redpeters.com or go to your YouTube channel. And again, listen to the songs, buy the songs, or just scroll through the titles and crack up.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
And, Red, promise us, if you do come to Chicago over the next year, give us a call. We'd love to have you come in our studio.
I love what you guys are doing. And we're from the same era.
Yeah.
You know, so,
absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, right, real quick, before we let you go, we're from the same era, and you're from the East Coast. We were wondering, did you ever get to hang out with our friend Les Paul?
No, but I'm, of course, familiar with his life.
Mm-hmm.
And most every guitarist I know owns at least one Les Paul.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what? We became really good friends of his, and after his passing, we wrote a book where we basically captured 19 years worth of interviews. We're going to send you a copy in exchange for the closing song. Okay.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I'm a fan of Steve Miller too. Grew up.
His godson.
Les Paul.
Yeah.
Giving him some pointers as a child, so.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight, and let's do this again in 26, okay?
Yes, I'd love to do that.
All right.
You know, if you're having some response and you get into trouble for playing my bleeped version, give me a call. I could send bail money.
Okay. Thank you, Red Peters.
If you can hold on for a second, and Julian, we'll get some information because we are going to send you a copy to Les Paul. But that's Red Peters, what a cool guy. Hayden Thompson was, we were very fortunate to have Hayden as a friend. He was there at the beginning of the birth of rock and roll, rockabilly music. He recorded that song was recorded in Sam Phillips' Sun Studios. And by the way, today is the anniversary of the birth of Sun Records. It was on this day back in 1950 that Sun Records was founded.
Mm-hmm.
And Hayden was there at the beginning, and he had a lengthy career that segued between rockabilly and country music, and he had a lot of ups and downs. We first met him in roughly the late 80s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's in the Rockabilly Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that strikes me about Hayden's career, and we're talking about him in the past tense because sadly Hayden passed away on New Year's Eve. And we were just talking about him on the radio last Saturday night.
And we had just talked with him.
Yeah.
I want to say it was less than 2 months ago because there is a brand new album that just came out.
And when we received it in the mail, we knew that Hayden would pick up the phone when we called, and he did. And we had a delightful conversation with him.
And the new album is called Hayden Thompson Sings Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, Carl Perkins, and Hayden Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still get it. And Hayden had an up and down career.
If you look at his career, you realize that he is one of the hardest working men in show business.
Oh, yeah.
Because he worked tirelessly from the time he was a young singer when rock and roll was just starting, and he just didn't stop.
Well, your mom and dad told us memories of time you became aware of Hayden Thompson was when your dad was managing a theater down in Tennessee.
Actually, it was a chain of theaters in West Tennessee, and they used to bring in music acts. And I remember the night when we said we're going to have Hayden Thompson on, and he said, "Hayden Thompson, I know that name." And all of a sudden, like a light bulb went off in his head, and he said, "Oh, he used to come and perform at my theaters." And Hayden remembered that whole history of performing up and down West Tennessee in movie theaters, whether it was in the lobby or it was at an intermission. It had to be the hardest work in the world, but he wanted to make it with music.
Yeah. And sometimes in those days, he would sometimes be performing on the back of a flatbed truck.
Yeah, yeah.
He had several records, several singles, some albums released. He went from some of the rockabilly album labels like Sun and Phillips. And in the later career, he recorded for Cap Records and did some country things that actually found him on the Grand Ole Opry. And on his latest album, they have a recording of that Grand Ole Opry appearance. The audio isn't the best, but you can hear. By, in fact, we listened to it, and we were amazed at the audience's reaction to it.
Oh, my, yeah. I'm glad they did include that on the CD, though, because that was really a moment for him in his music career to step on the stage of the Grand Ole Opry. And I've got to say, thank goodness for the European audience and their love of rockabilly, roots, American music, because it was in 1985 that he started traveling over to Europe to perform. And we used to joke because we would talk. He would even call us from some of these far-flung places. I'm in Denmark and I'm in Holland. And he was driving a limo in the Chicago area,
driving a limo. And a couple times a year, they would fly him over to Europe, where he performed for sold-out audiences.
Thousands.
It was part of the whole rockabilly revival over there. And he played Wembley and Sweden and Germany, and they absolutely loved him. And I mean, he had kind of two identities for a while.
Yeah, we used to laugh about, you know, here he is driving people around Chicago, and he goes over there, and they greet him at the airport, and they drive him around.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time he said he looked out in the audience, and there were people, young people, wearing T-shirts with his likeness on the front of the T-shirt. And when he talked about those moments, it was so cool, because you realize that he was getting the recognition he deserved.
He really did.
Yeah.
When we first had him in the studio, there was a new album that he'd just come out with. And one of the songs on that album took him back to one of the reasons he got into music. And it was about the influence that Elvis Presley had on him. And it was a song called The Boy from Tupelo. And Hayden's voice really developed over the years.
Yeah, big and strong and effortless when he would sing.
He never lost his passion for music. But in fact, we were thinking about Hayden. As you were putting up some of the decorations on our Christmas tree, Hayden would send us Christmas decorations from around the world.
For 20 years, I've had a section of our big Christmas tree that is, in fact, ornaments that he either brought to us on the radio show or sent to us from Denmark, from Holland, from Germany, from the Netherlands. I'm trying to remember because we've got a little dude drinking out of a beer stein. Mm-hmm. We've got a bear popping out of another stein. We have, a beautiful pair of Delft blue Dutch shoes, about an inch long, that hang on the tree. And so I have that whole section, and it's so international and so wonderful, and all from Hayden.
And Hayden would always send us, anytime he had a new album, or if there was an article or something about reviewing a performance that he'd done, because he played, I think he did one of the Viva Las Vegas shows, too.
He did, yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I think he was out there the same year that Dwayne Eddy was out there.
Yeah. He did the Stomp, too, down in New Orleans.
Yes, and they were excited to get him.
Yeah.
Everybody who ever worked with Hayden or saw some of his performances had nothing but wonderful
because
things to say.
You truly could not meet a nicer human being. He was, maybe that's the reason why he didn't become a mega star. He was just so gentle and so nice that you wonder if maybe, and he was marketing himself. He was doing all the work.
Yeah.
And getting the word out about him. And he did a really good job of that. In fact, 40 years ago, when he started going to Europe, he did that 55 times.
Yeah.
That's really impressive, where you come and, I mean, people are just practically passing out to see you. And then you come back home. And his two, I really think from interviewing him over the years, his loves were not only music, but his wife, Georgia, because he always talked about Georgia whenever we had him on the show.
And
she was the inspiration. And she, obviously, they had one son, Keith, and obviously she went along with this lifestyle for all those years, you know, for 70 years.
In fact, Fried Chicken, this is a song that Hayden first played for us. And he wrote it about his wife, kind of about his wife, Georgia.
The night he came into the studio for us to play some of the cuts of his new CD, I'll never forget.
In fact, didn't he send us a dub of that before it was released?
Yes, and we said, we've got to get you on the show. And he would, remember, he came in, he was a nervous wreck.
Yeah.
He was so nervous. He just wanted to make and he walked in with a box of Fannie Mae candy for me.
Yes.
And I think he had something for you. I mean, it's like, as I say, just such a special human being and such a talent. And I'm glad that we have time to say, you need to seek out his music. Because if you like this kind of music, the man was a master at it.
And oh, also, if you read the obituaries, you just found, and we found out from our friend Bill Dahl.
Yes, yes,
there is
yes.
a huge mistake in his obituary.
When you Google his name, Hayden Thompson, you will find that a number of stories and obituaries come up that he passed away in Wheeling, West Virginia.
No, no, no.
Wheeling, Illinois is where he lived. He came from the South, and he came up to the North for work and for opportunities. And if I'm not mistaken, something comes to mind. Nashville North used to be a place.
Yes, he used to play Nashville North regularly.
Yes, yes. And I think it was out on Irving Park. Somebody will know for
that
sure.
That sounds right.
Because I know my folks used to go there. So it's Wheeling, Illinois, not Wheeling, West Virginia. And thank you, Bill, for bringing that to our attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mississippi boy, starts playing guitar, doing talent shows, singing gospel. Ends up in Memphis when things are starting to happen in Memphis and becomes one of the rockabilly cats.
Yeah.
And then he makes his way north looking for more opportunities. And thankfully, he settled here, so we got to know him.
Yeah.
And
if you've never heard of Hayden Thompson, take some time.
Yeah.
Look him up. You will find there's all kinds of albums, tons of albums that have been reissued of his early rockabilly things. They've been reissued by a number of European labels.
Mm-hmm.
You will find Hayden didn't have his own website.
Letters were in longhand. When he would
yes.
send us articles, he would write on the article or he'd attach a note to it. And it was just wonderful to get mail from Hayden.
You might want to check out a company called Blue Light Records. That is the company that released his mm-hmm. most recent album. And also, you could do a search on probably for Bear Family.
Yeah.
They would have some of the stuff, too. But just a wonderful man, a wonderful – his passion was his music.
Absolutely.
And Georgia.
Yep. Yep. Oh, you can also pick up the album we talked about last Saturday night on the show because there's a Hayden cut on that one.
Yeah, Hayden's version of Brown Eyed Handsome
right,
Man.
Right, and Windy City Rocks.
That's on Windy City Rocks that is also from Bear Family Records.
That's right. Thank goodness for Bear Family putting out good quality product.
But again, if you look up his obituary, he was living in Wheeling, Illinois.
Yes. And a listener said, was he on GN? He was on our show, but he was also on the Barn Dance on GN because he talked about that, too.
Yeah, years ago on
back
the
in
WGN
the early 60s when the Barn Dance was on this here radio station. Yeah. One of the reasons why we came back to do this show, and this is the start of our third year.
No, this is the end of our third year.
Oh, you're right. Duh.
Yeah.
It's gone by so quickly.
Because if you look... I had to refresh myself, too.
Yeah.
Because I went, if you look at the WGN website and then you click around and you will find our names and click down to the information about us, the announcement about us coming back was in December of 22.
Mm-hmm.
We came back in January of
23.
And Julian, you've been with us for, what, two of those years?
Two and a half.
I want to say it was two and a half. I think it was May of 2023 when I joined you guys.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say one of the reasons we came back again was to do what we just did, is to have the luxury to share with you wonderful people that you should know.
Yeah.
And sadly, he's gone now, but maybe you'll seek out his music, and that makes me happy that we have a way to do those kinds of things.
And there are a lot of people that say, well, why won't you come back five nights a week? WGN wanted us. They were after us for several years. The new management was after us to come back full time, and we said, you know, we're kind of enjoying our life. And they said, well, then can we get you back at least one night a week? And we said, well, yeah, if you give us the freedom to do what we want. And they said, okay.
Yeah.
And
deal.
We have the kind of freedom that a lot of people in radio don't have.
So thank you all for being here, too, to keep us company.
Let's turn our attention to the publisher of Consumer Guide, Tom Appel.
Happy New Year. Welcome to the show, Tom Appel.
Happy New Year.
And how did you welcome in the new year?
quietly. literally, my wife and I and my daughter watched TV until 12:15 and then went to bed.
With an iced tea on the side, right?
Exactly.
Of course.
Well, you're singing our song. We were on the couch in the living room and watching, tuning back and forth between all of the channels. And as we said earlier, not just because we're part of the WGN family, but kudos to Channel 9. I don't know if you happened to tune to Channel 9 after the Dick Clark New Year's Rockin' Eve midnight thing, but Channel 9 did about 10 to 15 minutes of wonderful photography video of what was going on up and down the Chicago River. It was
the fireworks.
Extraordinary.
I did see that. Yeah, it was Andre Darlis. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Really nice. Okay, Tom joins us, believe it or not, twice a month to talk about cars and what's going on in the world of automotive.
And can I take you before, I don't know if this is on your list, but can I take you to one of the stories that broke this past week? That Tesla is no longer the biggest maker of them newfangled cars.
Yeah, interesting story. But Tesla is now seeing declined sales 2 years in a row. But they lost their crown of the largest EV producer to China's BYD. And for people who don't know, BYD is a huge automotive producer in China. They focus on electric vehicles. And years ago, Warren Buffett invested in the company. So he saw what was going on there. And for people who don't know a lot about the Chinese automotive landscape, it is the privately owned companies that are actually succeeding. They have a lot of nationally owned, federally owned companies that are all failing and overproducing product and having to sell it at a deep, deep discount. But BYD doing very well, selling very good electric vehicles, and trying to export them to Europe and the U.S. We'll be hearing more about that company.
Is it possible that they would be able to export them to the U.S. With tariffs?
Not the way things work right now. And one of the workarounds possibly is for them to produce vehicles directly in Mexico, become a Mexican producer of vehicles, and then go around the tariffs.
Wow.
So that would be the trick play.
Yeah. Oh, so watch the space, right, to see if they do that. Because they're going to be they're going to be the big gorilla then.
They are, and they're famously producing completely functional, decent EVs in China that sell for $10,000 to $12,000. It would be difficult for them to sell them for that price in the U.S. They'd probably be more like $25,000-$30,000 with safety equipment and taxes and tariffs and all the stuff. But still, they're a very efficient manufacturer.
Yeah,
but in today's marketplace, $25,000 to $30,000 that would be huge.
It's a big deal, yeah. It would still undercut anything you can buy in the U.S.
Hmm. So when we look back on 2025, I suspect that tariffs is at the top of the list of topics in the auto world?
Yeah, the tariff thing is so confusing because I don't think it affected consumers as profoundly as we expected it to.
Mm-hmm.
Some products disappeared. Some products lost base trim levels, so their prices naturally went up. But ultimately, car prices didn't rise that much last year, about $2,000 to about an average of $50,000. So the tariff thing, largely absorbed by manufacturers. Manufacturers did a really good job of working around the tariffs. And it was a big deal because it was really profoundly impacting a lot of things. But at the consumer level, kind of quiet. It didn't really hit as hard as we thought it would.
Because we were confused.
Yes, everyone was.
Yeah.
Manufacturers were. No one really understood the laws it was super mess.
Well, when you look back on 2025, tariffs, Tesla, any more tea that we can touch on? Or actually any of the other, let's say the top five biggie stories in your opinion from 2025?
One big story, and it's a little depressing to me because I kind of like progress, is that the federal government repealed the CAFE standards for vehicles. So, and the thing about that was it wasn't just a restriction. It was really an invitation to innovate. And manufacturers did that. You know, we saw big six-cylinder engines be replaced by turbocharged fours. We saw vehicles getting lighter. We saw increased use of turbocharging. There was a lot of stuff there that was good, ultimately, for everybody. And a lot of that stuff is unnecessary at the moment. And if there is, in fact, a change of management, as it were, at the federal level in 3 years, we're probably going to change back. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how this plays out. But one of the things that's already happened is that Stellantis has brought back the Hemi engine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. for Ram pickups, and it's probably going to show up in Jeeps as well. And as cool as that is for the end user, it does represent a step backwards technologically and for the environment.
Yes.
You know, you just mentioned something that to me really underscores that we are going backwards right now. Years ago, if we were road testing a vehicle and if it had a four-cylinder engine, even a turbocharged four-cylinder mm-hmm. engine, it was like, what? Now, a turbocharged four, I'm mm-hmm. good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can drive through the Ozark Mountains in that easily. Speaking from a woman who drove through the Ozark Mountains in a 1978 four-cylinder Mustang, it was hell. It really was.
But again,
that was a terrible engine, too.
Yes.
But again, these restrictions forced the industry to innovate,
yeah,
which resulted in good things for everybody.
They did. And another thing, too, looking back, it's kind of hard to remember this, but the Japanese were coming in with better products than the American manufacturers mm-hmm. were building. They were lighter, more yep. reliable, more fuel efficient, and they tended to last a little bit longer too. And with these rules and regulations, the big three, the Detroit three, literally forced to keep up. They were awakened from their slumber and started mm-hmm. to build better mm-hmm. stuff as a result.
Absolutely. Okay. When I look back over the past year and the fact that we talked to you twice a month, recalls were a thing. I mean, they were a really wow. big segment, right? And one manufacturer in particular
blew it out of the water.
Yes, they did.
They're number one.
Number one, yes.
A new list, I think it was published today by Motor One. It's a good website. Ford had 12.9 million cars recalled Ooh, last year.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure that includes Lincoln, but that is a staggering number.
I have to ask, why was Ford so ahead of the rest of the pack when it came to recall? What's going on?
Part of this is really bad timing, and just these things were sort of learned, discovered at a particular point in time. But the other is a very interesting thing happening in the industry, and there's a list that's published every year. It doesn't normally made public, but there is a consulting firm that rates manufacturers' relationships with their suppliers. And it will not surprise you to learn that Ford has among the worst relationship with its Tier 2 and Tier 3 suppliers. Meanwhile, at the top of the list, Toyota has the best relationship with its suppliers. And I think happy suppliers make for cars that aren't recalled nearly as much.
What causes a bad relationship with suppliers? Is it the management saying, okay, we only want blah, blah, blah?
Or not paying up front?
Or is it union problems? Or what's the deal? And I ask union because I will go back real far to the days of Studebaker when they had some serious union problems. And they wound up, and I'm not anti-union. If anything, I'm very pro-union. But Studebaker wound up giving a whole lot to the unions, and did that play into anything, or what's the cause with Ford?
I don't know. And Ford was sort of depressed about its relationship with labor this year because the union came out so hard in their negotiations with Ford. Mm-hmm. Ford used to pride itself on being very friendly with the workforce. So I don't know if that was it. One of the things that makers try to do is renegotiate a contract while the contract exists.
Mm-hmm.
And suppliers had a very bad time during the tariff situation this past year because they were getting hit harder than the manufacturers. Their stuff goes across the borders, and they have contracts with set prices. So manufacturers weren't necessarily obliged to give them financial consideration, though their costs had gone way up. But the other thing, too, is when a manufacturer puts the screws to a supplier really hard and tries to get the price down too far, mm-hmm. quality can suffer. And Toyota famously doesn't try to negotiate lower prices during a contract. And they just work better with their suppliers.
The Motor One article on the subject of Ford leading the pack when it comes to recalls, they do point out, in fairness, about 4 million out of the 12.9 million Ford recalled have to do with potentially faulty backup cameras. And I know we've talked about that every week. And the most prolific sub-million car affected issues were failing low-pressure fuel pumps, cracked fuel injectors creating a fire risk, rupturing rear brake hoses, and, get this, the Explorer B-pillar door trim pieces that may fall off. The official fix for that last one involves dealer techs removing the piece and putting it back on with adhesive. But given the sheer amount of resources Ford has surely had to spend on recalls this year, I half expected the NHTSA list remedy to involve duct tape.
Wow.
Yeah.
It practically does. It's probably really good two-faced tape.
Well, they put Gorilla Glue on that and then stick it back up there. And that's your $90,000 car, so drive it on.
See, now I'm hearing Johnny's dad in my head, who always said, and I wouldn't disagree with him, the two things you need in life, duct tape and WD-40. And you're good to go.
When you go to that island, be sure to take those two things with you in case you get stranded there. On the most recalled car brands, number two, you mentioned Toyota, but you jumped from 12.9 million for Ford down to 3.2 million for Toyota. And Stellantis at 2.7, Honda 1.5, Hyundai 1 million, General Motors 998,000. Kia, Tesla 745,000, Volkswagen 663,000, and BMW 508,000. So that's the top 10 most recalled cars of 2025.
We're talking with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide, and the blatant plug light started flashing. So, Tom, share what you know about this place called Consumer Guide with the clan.
Yeah, check us out at consumerguide.com. A lot of new stuff up there, including my review of a fantastic vehicle. Maybe we'll talk about it later, the Polestar 4. I'm really excited that I was able to drive both Polestar and Lucid vehicles in the last few weeks, and my reviews of those vehicles are up there. Plus, people can check out the Car Stuff podcast anywhere you get your podcasts.
And they can follow Tom on Blue Sky at Car Guy Tom.
That's correct. That's me.
So, what are you driving?
I'm currently driving a nice vehicle. I'm driving the Lexus TX350. And for people unfamiliar with the TX, it's only been around for about 2 years, but it is a long wheelbase, extended length version of the famous Lexus RX, which had been their best-selling car for a long time. It's a mid-size crossover with additional consideration for third-row space. So it's really just a slightly larger RX with a usable third row. It is a very refined vehicle. It's very quiet on the highway, plenty of power, and really, really well screwed together. Whenever I get into a Lexus, I'm just always surprised by the workmanship.
Mm-hmm. Price point?
This vehicle comes in under 70. I'm driving the, I forgot what version I'm driving. I'm driving the most luxurious, Platinum, I think. No, Premium. I'll get to that in a moment. There is an F-Sport version that's more expensive. I'm driving the most expensive conventional version. It's probably about $68,000 as it sits.
Okay. Comfortable enough, though, for tall, full-figured people?
The front door is surprisingly just a little bit small for me, but I'm on the extreme side of the scale, so I'm not going to knock it for that. It's a very comfortable vehicle.
A listener was asking us the last time you were on, why do the doors open so far so that you have to practically fall out of the car to grab the door handle to close it?
And that's pretty much the norm these days.
Yeah, and I thought as I was reading that text, I feel your pain because I'm always afraid the door's going to get away from me and hit the car next to me or hit the door in the garage or whatever. I read a story, the final days of 2025, and I thought it was a joke. It's the BMW screwing the owners with a new screw joke. Is it a joke? That's the question. Are you familiar with this story? They've got a patent for a new proprietary screw that has the BMW BYW logo on the top of it, on the head of it, so that you will not be able to work on your car at all. And you will not be able to take it to Jeff and Larry's mechanic. You will have to go to your dealership because they're the only ones that will have the proper tool to remove those screws with the BMW logo on them.
And
this is a repeat of a story that's almost exactly 40 years old, maybe 45 years old. This is hilarious.
Was it BMW 40 plus years ago?
General Motors.
Really?
And it was the screws that were used for the headlight surrounds, and it was called Torx head, T-O-R-X, Torx head, and it was kind of a star-shaped thing, and you needed, there was no way to take those screws out without a Torx head screwdriver.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and we scrambled. I worked at a gas station at the time, and we scrambled to try to get something, and we got some unlicensed weird thing, but we needed it badly because in those days, headlights went out pretty regularly. And it was kind of a bread and butter money channel for us. And it was a service we provided. And we just had to get a Torx head screwdriver. And it was like precious gold. We could only get a hold of one. And everyone had to know exactly where you put it.
Well, yeah, don't just lay it down, guys. I just thought that story was, I literally thought it was a joke at first because they showed a picture of what the screw is going to look like and that they've applied for the patent. And I thought, why? Why would you do that? You're forcing the owner. And in fact, they say that way you can't take it to unauthorized repairs. And I thought, well, if I own the car, can't I authorize whatever I want to happen to the car?
And actually, the more I think about that story, it takes a whole lot more than one screw. And A, most cars built today, the average person can't work on.
Well,
but
if you want to take it to your local,
but that's kind of implying that you open the hood and there's one screw that that allows you to see what's under the hood. If you can't remove this screw to remove the covering of the engine,
I fell down the rabbit hole on Reddit on this subject because the Beamer owners were ballistic. They were just out of their minds. Now that they work on their cars, they don't.
And if you read it on the internet, it's got to be.
It's got to be true. They don't want to be forced to go back to the dealership if they have someone, you know, a local place that can take care of it. At any rate, so many people said, yeah, but give the Chinese a minute and it will be available on Temu for $9.99.
You know, that is what's going to happen. Yeah. Someone will quickly come up, patent be damned, and they'll have those screwdrivers out there.
How about
But let me hold you for a second on screws and headlights. What is the story? I read a story within the past 2 weeks, and it had to do with, I can't think of the manufacturer, but they are changing the kind of headlight connection system that they use to make it easier to change headlights if one goes out, rather than having to...
To go to a mechanic?
Oh, Mercedes-Benz.
Okay.
Yeah, that was an interesting story, and it was kind of twofold. But Mercedes is going to return to using screws to assemble headlight assemblies. The reason being, there are two reasons for this. One, because it makes them more repairable, and thus they should cost less to replace if there's damage to just the lens. And additionally, it's an attempt to improve quality, because right now they seal everything with adhesive. They can't be opened, and if something's wrong, you can't adjust it, basically. Interesting story,
So if they're replacing the lens, because it isn't one bulb anymore, it's a whole bunch of little...
LED, yeah.
So basically, it's the lens they're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it would be the cover, not the bulb, or themselves.
They're transitioning to using screws and fasteners instead of glue and headlights for future models, making them more repairable and recyclable, reducing cost and waste for current model screw changes usually involve replacing rusted adjustment screws or removing mounting bolts to access and replace the entire assembly. And I saw somewhere where it could run you anywhere from $275 to $450 to get a headlight changed on a Mercedes.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about this is if you think about how cars get handed down over time, and once a car is in like the hands of the third owner, it's pretty old, right? Probably over 10 years old. And one of the things that happens, especially to cars with really big headlight lenses like Mercedes, is that they become fogged up. They get scratched and the stuff comes off of it, the protective acrylic finish, and they fog up. And you can't really replace them. It's not financially feasible to replace those if you're a used car dealer or you're trying to trade in your car, because mm-hmm. you don't want to pay $300 or $400 for right. a new assembly. But if you can just replace the lens for mm-hmm. $50, all of a sudden your car's worth a little bit more in resale mm-hmm. value, and yeah. it looks better.
Interesting.
Before we break, speaking of repairing things, I want to share something that happened to us a week ago, and this is for people that have older vehicles, and the vehicle that it's our a daily driver. We have a 2005 Cadillac DeVille DTS. We're driving home last week, and we have a navigation system, and all of a sudden we would see the navigation on the screen, and then about maybe 5 seconds later it would go away. Okay. I would click on the map again. About 5 seconds, goes away. I'll cut to the chase. When we got home, for some reason, I had a smart thought. Rarely happens, but I did. And and when we pulled in the garage, I clicked on the front of the screen where you can have the screen go flat.
Tilt.
And then took out the CD. Looked at the CD. And it was, I don't know, it just seemed kind of smudged.
Blue on it.
Cleaned it a little bit, put it back in, problem solved.
Wow.
That's me knocking on wood.
So for anybody who finds himself in that situation, rather than taking it to the to a dealer and them saying, that's going to be a $1,000 fix for that, try just popping the CD out, put the CD back in, see if it works.
It's the classic case, unplug it, wait 60 seconds, yeah. plug it back in, you know?
Yeah.
Or if you're an engineer, you just hit it.
Yeah.
You know, you just slap it.
Page 37 of the engineer's manual. Get the hammer.
Hit it.
Hit it.
Yep. Quick question. A listener says, we were talking about headlights. Why are headlights now plastic and not glass? And the listener points out that a 1990 Toyota Camry had clear headlights and they were glass.
Yeah, it's a safety thing and a weight thing. Glass flying around is more dangerous than plastic flying around, basically. And glass headlights are actually pretty heavy. They probably save 5 pounds a car.
Yeah.
By going with plastic.
Okay. Good question. We should touch on recalls. We touched on the most recalled cars mm-hmm. from the past year. What do we have to kick off the year in the world of recalls?
A couple of recent recalls. The Toyota Camry, small number of cars relative to the Camry. Camry's volume. 51,644 Camrys are being recalled for a lack of power. This has to do with a faulty power inverter. And that would have to do with the hybrid system. People may recall that for 2025, Camrys are now all hybrid. So small number of vehicles. It's 51,000 plus 3,800 Corolla Crosses. That's the small crossover that Toyota now makes. Word should be going out February 13th.
Okay. And you're saying that Ford is not on the list to start the year?
I didn't see any Ford recalls.
I know. I was
Happy New Year.
I was looking. I was like Googling Ford recalls for January 2026 and nothing came up. God bless them. Starting the year off right. another listener says, ChatGPT says that BMW has a patent for the screw. That's exactly what I said. They applied for the patent. It made the news a couple of days ago. But they have patents for a lot of things that they don't use. Well, tell that to the BMW owners on Reddit who are foaming at the mouth. And somebody pointed out, do you work on your car? No, but I want to be able to if I want to do it. I'm like, okay, good. You don't want to go down that rabbit hole because those, moving on. Sunnyside Chrysler in McHenry, Illinois, quoted us $1,400 to replace the alternator on our 2021 Chrysler Pacifica, and there's a 3-day lead time for the dealer to receive that alternator. What?
Yeah, it's expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, but definitely shop around and see if you can find a reputable local shop that will do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a bunch of money.
Yeah, wow.
Alternator reminds me of probably, what was it within the past year? It was probably one of our scariest car moments.
Mm-hmm.
We're driving home.
We called Tom.
We did.
Yeah.
Driving home with our 2005 mm-hmm. DeVille. And
afternoon rush hour. We'd come down here for a meeting.
You're right.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, I notice, okay, that the lights seem to go down, and all of a sudden
the radio went off.
I realized that apparently we weren't getting any charging from the alternator. So I turned everything off.
And it was hot.
And managed to coast us from here back home. And
I'm on the phone with Tom saying, what do you think happened?
And when we got in our driveway, I backed into our driveway,
mm-hmm.
called up next morning, and yeah, it was an alternator. And I don't think, I think they did have to order from
a dealership.
From a dealership, but I don't want to say it was more than a few hundred dollars.
A few hundred dollars, yeah. And then the tow cost you. So 14 sounds awfully, awfully high.
It does indeed. I remember doing the alternator on my Scirocco back in 1988. It was $100. I did it myself.
What?
And everyone thought I was crazy for buying a Volkswagen because I had to pay for expensive Bosch parts. But $100.
Okay. We have yammered, and we're going to run out of time. Let's sneak in Jim, who has a question about a comparison of vehicles. Right, Jim?
Yes, Tom. I'm your first caller of the year.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Listen, I got to replace my old horse with a new car this year. I'm looking at a Mazda 3 sedan or a Civic LX sedan.
So
what do you think?
Your opinions on the Mazda 3 sedan versus the Civic LX.
I believe the Mazda would cost... Oh, I'll go ahead.
I'm not looking for a hybrid. I'm looking for a base sedan, no turbo. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a speed demon.
Okay.
Those are probably my favorite vehicles in the class, so I would definitely test drive them both. They're both pretty sporty. The Mazda's got the nicer interior. If you're not looking at the turbo, the power should be about the same. If you're looking at the turbo, the Mazda is way faster. That's an excellent turbocharged engine. But the things to look for, really handling, ride quality, and interior quality. And both of those vehicles really do well in those categories. It's going to come down to personal preference. I recommend them both highly.
Okay. All right. Oh, and the other thing about steamed up windows, Tom.
Yes.
A lot of times, and I'll tell you this, the carpeted floor mats soak all that snow in the winter.
Oh, time, okay.
It gets about 40 degrees, and you might have a gallon of water in all four floor mats.
Mm.
So it's like you humidity. Like a greenhouse effect.
Mm-hmm.
Put the floor mats out.
I'm not sure the officer was going to buy that, though, when he gets pulled over.
Yeah, I was listening to go ahead and try that excuse.
Listening to his reggae music.
If it works.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate your call tonight. Quickly, Doug from Naperville says, Torx fasteners aren't all that new. I'm pretty sure I have them on headlights and even interior trim panels on cars, at least back to 1999. I got screwdrivers and driver bits for them. But again, we're talking about something brand new for BMW. Google it. Yeah. You'll see a picture of it.
I think Torx fasteners would be a great group name.
The Torx. Yeah. I agree. The Torx fasteners. Okay.
I play sitar, yeah.
Then I'll bring my accordion, okay?
Okay. So what are you getting over the next couple of weeks that you're looking forward to driving?
Oh, wow, what's coming up? You know what I have coming up, because I'm just excited because I haven't driven one in forever?
Is or dribbled one.
Or dribbled, yeah, yeah. I haven't dribbled in a Corolla in years.
Swing by Taco Bell, you will.
But I have a Corolla coming in. It's the hybrid, and it's all-wheel drive.
Oh,
and
good.
It's kind of – the Corolla's been around for so long. It's just so cool that this staple vehicle that dads buy their daughters,
yeah,
you know, is available with hybrid and all-wheel drive. I'm excited to drive that.
I can't wait.
So it's put together with staples?
Stop
yeah.
it.
And duct tape.
We didn't even get to talk about the cool experience you had, the Lucid and the –
Oh, yeah.
What was the other one?
Oh, the Polestar, yeah.
The Polestar. That is a weird name for a car. All right, in 1 minute, sum it up. Go.
Well, the I'll stick to the Polestar 4, which I drove more recently, but Polestar now has two vehicles available in the U.S., the 3 and the 4. The 3 is a large, really a mid-sized crossover, and the 4 is kind of a smaller sedan-looking kind of coupe sedan vehicle, and I know that that definition bothers people, but this is a fantastic vehicle. And even with the full self-driving stuff built in, that's not — the software isn't ready for it yet, but even with that price, the vehicle came to under 80 grand. Beautiful car, fast, fun to drive, beautiful interior, really well thought out. It's modern, but still kind of accessible. But the really weird part of it is there's no rear window. It doesn't fit into the design. So what you have is an electronic rear mirror on the interior. That's a little hard to get used to.
Okay, we got to talk about this more next time you join us.
Next time you're that will lead off our conversation.
That's weird. Okay, Tom. Thanks a million. ConsumerGuide.com, and you can follow Tom on Blue Sky. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Time once again for Sports Between the Sheets.
Woo-hoo!
And Gabe, we have so much to get to about the Bears and Detroit. But before we go there, I would like to go back a little bit. There has been a lot of controversy, and now there are more and more stories coming out saying, you know, that officiating may not have been so wonderful. And
the Bears and 49ers game.
And yeah. I believe some of the officials have been
investigated.
Being investigated.
Yeah, some of the referees, yeah.
So
it was a great game.
Oh, it was a wonderful game. But here's the question. What are the possible options? Obviously, they're not going to say, oh, we're changing the score of the game. What could possibly happen? Would it be a little more restrictions or a little more, what do we do? A coach replay for the next season or what happens? Because there have been a number of cases, not just with the Bears, but of really bad officiating this year.
The only thing that I can see happening, and this would be the nuclear option in the situation, would just be, you know, bring in all new refs, similar to what the NBA did about a little more than a decade ago. They had brought in a bunch of new officials, late 2000s, early 2010s, roughly after the officials had ended their lockout. There was a bunch of new officials that were brought in. I don't remember the exact specifics. It was so long ago, but one thing about the lockout is that the replacement refs were actually given quite good reviews during that time when this happened. That they were actually players who felt that the replacement refs were better than the actual refs of the league had.
Mm-hmm.
So the only real option would be, you know, you train new refs and you bring them in, because obviously, you know, we've all seen, you know, a lot of bad calls throughout the years, especially, you know, when it comes to the Bears. I mean, let's just take a look at what happened in, you know, both games against, you know, the Packers this year.
And Green Bay.
I mean, just against the Packers in general through the years. Mm-hmm. You know, how many times have, you know, the Bears get a sack on a Packers quarterback and there's a, you know, a bogus penalty called? Or, you know, just a lot of, you know, whether it's a poor judgment call or whether it's just, you know, something that, you know, one official, you know, saw one way and a different official saw another way, but they went with the call anyway. The only way you could, you know, you either retrain the officials or you bring in new ones is the only way to really solve the issue.
Well, there's also talk of possibly one of those officials betting.
Yes.
And if that's the case, that goes back to what Tom Brady has said.
Mm-hmm.
He's not suggested anybody was betting, but he has said And he was very, very strongly stating that we've got to straighten up because the game of football will become entertainment,
wrestling. It'll become wrestling, exactly.
It won't be a sport if we don't take this seriously and look into these charges of poor officiating.
And Brady has become so outspoken, and God bless him for doing that.
The highest paid person on television.
Let's not forget what happened in 2007 before sports betting was legal. We all remember Tim Donaghy, the NBA referee who got caught betting, did time in federal prison. So, so as we know that there's precedence for, you know, referees being disciplined for, you know, betting on games. Obviously, now that it's legal, you can't, you know, throw them in jail unless there's obviously, you know, we look at what's happening in the NBA now with the player and assistant coach that, you know, are, you know, perhaps maybe found themselves in legal trouble over, you know, sports betting, even though sports betting is legal now, there may have been.
Or throwing games, that's what's happening.
So obviously, you know, if there's a case of officials betting, then there definitely needs to, you know, something definitely needs to be done. But this all goes to the whole point of, you know, once sports betting was legalized, you know, everyone's fear automatically was, you know, we could see, you know, players, coaches, officials, whoever, you know, betting on their own games. And as we all know, baseball's had the rule for, you know, since the dawn of time that, you know, you can't bet on your own games if you're a player in the league. And remember, there's that pitcher from Cleveland who's found himself in hot water for allegedly betting. So,
for his entire life.
Right. So, you know, so obviously, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, again, the only way to prevent such matters is if, you know, you absolutely have a ban on anyone within the league betting on the games. I mean, that's really the only way you can prevent that is like baseball has. At the same time, you know, with all the money that's being generated, with all the sponsorships now that come with this, you know, it's a very difficult road to navigate. But again, at the end of the day, as far as in terms of the officials, again, you either retrain them or you bring in new ones. It's really the only thing you can do about it.
Well, okay. We're at T-minus 14, just about 14 hours and counting until everything happens at Soldier Field.
And Bears in Detroit.
Yeah.
And this is a must-watch game.
Now, the Bears have a better record going into this, right?
Detroit is completely eliminated from playoff contention, and a win gives the Bears the 2 seed, and with that 2 seed, they will be hosting Green Bay, a third meeting with Green Bay. It'll be at Soldier Field. It'll be the first round of the playoffs. Unfortunately, Seattle clinched the number 1 seed with Saturday night's win over San Francisco. They also won the NFC West division. So basically, if the Bears win, they get the number 2 seed. They get the home game. And then depending on how the rest of the playoffs play out from there, they could potentially get a second-round home game as well. Again, depending, because the way it works out is that the 1 seed will play the lowest remaining seed, and if the Bears advanced, they, you know, play the highest remaining seed, you know, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But
well, what happens if they lose?
If they lose, they could potentially, depending on what happens, I believe, with Philadelphia, I believe they could drop to
3.
Certainly 3. They could even drop to 4th.
Because if Philadelphia beats, if Philadelphia wins, then they move up to 2 from 3.
I believe
so. And then the Bears will flip with them, and they move down to 3 from 2.
And I believe the Rams are in this mix as well. I got to double check, but basically, bottom line for the Bears, they win. And they get that number 2 seed, and they get that home game in the first round.
But whatever happens, the Bears are in the playoffs. Yay!
Yeah,
and that's what we've been waiting for. And let's go back to what happened in 2020, and when the Bears made the playoffs, but nobody wanted them there because everybody knew what was going to happen. Matt Nagy was going to stick around for another season.
Oh.
And let's face it, the Bears did not deserve to be in the playoffs that year. They played horrible that entire year.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why they got in was basically based on mathematics. The rest of the teams were so bad behind them that they basically got the 7th seed by default. And we all saw what happened when they ended up playing the Saints in that playoff game. And you know, the Bears did not. Yeah, I mean, I'll even go ahead and say they had no business being there, because normally when the Bears make the playoffs, you know, the city, you know, unites around the team. We're all gung-ho for the Bears in the postseason. That was not the case in 2020. And, you know, now it's, you know, we have much more hope and optimism now than we did back then. So let's not also forget that Caleb Williams has a chance to, you know, make franchise history. 270 yards, yeah. And he can become the first Bears quarterback to throw for 4,000 yards in a single season, and it just boggles my mind that it's never happened.
Mm-hmm. And this season, oh boy, did the Bears deserve to be in the playoffs. And one of the things I have loved about this season, even if the Bears lost, they were in it right down to the last 2 minutes of the game.
That 49ers game was wonderful because it was their head, they're behind, their head, yep. back and forth.
The thing that has impressed me the most about this current version of the Bears is the way that they've been able to come back, whether win or lose. They give up a touchdown, but then they respond with a touchdown of their own. You know, just as recently as a few years ago, they weren't able to do that. Although the problem in San Francisco, and this is what, you know, hurt their chances of getting the number one seed, their defense couldn't stop anybody. And they're going to have to tighten that up heading into the postseason because they gotta get the pass rush going. They got to, you know, cover guys downfield. They got to make plays, bottom line. And that didn't happen in San Francisco. So thankfully, the offense was able to keep up, but they can't rely on that every week. But again, the fact that the Bears have been able to come back, especially late in games, I mean, it literally came down to the wire in San Francisco. So the fact that the Bears are able to pull out these type of performances when, you know, how many times have we seen them try that in the past and fail miserably? And this is definitely not the Bears that those Bears fans of us who are of an older generation were certainly used to.
And there have been so many games when Caleb has given a master class in how to do a two-minute drill.
And the amazing thing about, you know, him being able to do that is, you know, let's keep in mind that this is probably his fourth different offense since college.
Yeah.
You know, remember, he played at two different colleges, and let's keep in mind that he's had, you know, multiple offensive coordinators since coming to the NFL. So, you know, obviously he's proven himself to be a quick learner. He's able to adjust, and he's able to, you know, figure it out. And as we've seen this season, he's progressed from week to week.
He did two things off the field that impressed me so much in the past month. One was after the 49ers game, the player that was, it was frustrating because there he was, flat of his back on the field, and they're celebrating, the 49ers have won, and he's still flat of his back. And Caleb apparently did not stick around for the post-game interviews because he wanted to find out if this guy was okay. And then, again, he did not go to practice earlier last week because he had to go to the hospital to check on somebody. Mm-hmm. He said, I just had to know he was okay. And I thought, all right, we're talking priorities.
Yeah. Let's not also forget that when that game ended, before he left the field, the first thing he did is he went and up to the first couple 49ers players that he saw and shook their hand.
Yes. Yes.
When he had every reason to completely walk off that field
and be huff.
I'm not doing this. I'm upset. But he shook everybody's hand, showed sportsmanship, and then left the field. So that just goes to show you, you know, what kind of person he
is.
That even in defeat, you know, he's gracious.
Absolutely.
Okay. Bottom line, and I'm not just being a homer when I say this, I say the Bears win today.
I definitely have the Bears winning. It is going to be a close one because Detroit still has some weapons, despite the fact that they're out of it. They're going to compete. Bears win 24-21.
Ooh, I was saying 21-18. You're 24-21.
Yeah, I think you're right, Gabe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
I've been close a few times this year.
I'm glad it's 325. It'd be better if it was in the evening, but 325 is good.
We'll be texting you during the game. You know that.
Thank you, Gabe.
Bear down, everyone.
One of the strange things as we enter 2026, now there is a postmark change that could impact getting ballots and bills in on time.
Well, the story made me think of how on tax night, we used to talk to people who were sitting in line outside the post office in downtown Chicago because they wanted a postmark. I mean, it would be 11 o'clock at night, but they wanted it postmarked on the 15th.
Yeah.
That was a very big deal, and that was legal and legit, and that's the way it's been forever. Mm-hmm. And that's going to change as of this year. So for decades, it's been this way. And as I understand it, when mail was accepted by the Postal Service, has been used in law as proof that an individual met a deadline. So it has been proven in cases that it's met in individuals, that you, the individual, have met a deadline.
Such as submitting a ballot
for
Election Day.
Yeah. So a USPS postmark used to indicate the date when a mail was dropped in a mailbox or submitted at the post office counter. Now they're clarifying in a new rule that the postmark will reflect the date an envelope is first processed.
That is so stupid.
By an automated USPS sorting machine, potentially days after it was dropped off, not the actual drop-off date. Now, this won't affect us too much because it's been, I think, since COVID. When COVID was over with, I said, I am never putting a piece of mail in another mailbox. I will take the time to walk it into the post office because, frankly, I'm afraid to put mail in a mailbox because in our community, the mailbox by the police station was broken into.
Yep.
And I'm like, it's by the police station. And now the post office that we go to north of our community, that post office doesn't even have boxes outside. You have to go inside. I thought that was interesting.
And that post office has also put up those kind of little barriers that you can't run your car into.
Yeah.
I mean, welcome to life in 2026. But this brings up so many questions. And honestly, over the next couple of weeks, and I know that by design our show is entertainment and pop culture oriented, but there are a number of serious things that we need to deal with. This is one of them. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk to some people to talk to about, well, okay, what is the best way to assure that your mail is postmarked when you send it and your ballot is taken care of?
Now it has to be taken into the post office and have it manually stamped. Tax payments, charitable contributions, legal filings, rent payments, other bills or items that rely on a postmark date for deadlines can be impacted by the later postmarks and risk late penalties and fees and delinquency. Many states also accept their ballots that are postmarked by Election Day. So if you put it in there before Election Day, but it doesn't get processed until after, then you're in trouble. Time-sensitive mail should be mailed several days before the deadline. People can go inside their local post office and ask for a hand-stamped manual postmark on the date or use certified mail. Okay, I could see doing that for my taxes.
Yep.
Would I do that for my ballot?
I think we're going to do that for anything that is of an official nature. But when it comes to ballot, and by the way, parenthetically, I will say, Johnny's last ballot in the last presidential election still has not been counted.
This is true. And they were both handed.
Yep.
No. I put them in the box. Both of our ballots, I put them in the box, and I was given two stickers and had a delightful conversation with the woman at our voting.
At the polling place.
Yeah.
And we have heard from people who have said that their ballots were never counted, too.
Remember, a week later, I said, I just checked again. It's not, it hasn't been processed. You got the email. I never got the email. Yep. I had the address where I could go in and check to see if my ballot had been received. Nope, never happened. And mentioned it that night on the radio, and people literally from around the country said,
out of the woodwork, we had texts and emails with people saying, our ballots were not counted.
Finally, the increase in USPS shipping rates is set to take effect on the 18th of this month. Prices are based on the package's weight and the distance it's being shipped. Priority mail prices start at $10.45 per package and $11.90 for flat rate. It's interesting. This is as an aside. We had ordered some CDs and this was four CDs, and the shipping rate was $10, and I think we paid $10.50. And I looked at the outside of the package, and they actually only paid $4 to mail it. So they charged us $10.50, but they paid $4. And that's why it took so much longer for us to get them in the mail. So anyway, that's one of the stories that we will be talking about this year. Here we are, the 3rd/4th of January, and it's already the first of the 13 full moons that we will have this year, because we'll have a blue moon. A blue moon is when you have two full moons in one month. But this is a super full moon.
Miss Johnny, I have to ask, what makes it a super moon?
Because it's a big-ass moon. That's the best way to describe it. So if you're out driving around, you go, woo-wee.
Are our windows fogging up?
It's the wolf moon, too, because it's the wolf moon because wolves get active this time of the year. They're out looking for love this time. Oh, no. Wait. Diane Cannon and Neil Young in 5 minutes.
There you go.
Wow. So, yes, if you're out and about this evening, you probably can't miss the full supermoon. It was really clear when we were driving in tonight, too.
And it's amazing. I can see the Wrigley Building from here tonight. Last Saturday, we couldn't see, and we literally could not see the building that is next to our building last Saturday.
It was like we had black drapes pulled down on all of these windows that are around us on two sides. This month's full moon will reach its full phase while close to perigee.
Who?
The nearest point to Earth.
I thought he was drafted.
The nearest point to the Earth in its 27-day orbit, giving rise to a visually spectacular supermoon, which can be 30% brighter and 14% larger than the smallest full moon of the year. And I've said this before, but one time in my life, as a child, I saw a supermoon, and I thought, this is it. I was very active in church. I was going to church like 3 or 4 times a week. And literally, I thought, well, this is it. The Lord is coming, because the moon was so freakishly large and so bright. I really, really thought as a kid that this was the end. You know, get down on your hands and knees. So that was me on my hands and knees praying. January's full moon is often called the wolf moon, in reference to the fact that the packs of predators do become active this time of the year. Don't say anything. Don't say a word. Just take it all in. The moon's full moon phase coincides with the moon's closest approach to Earth. And it's pretty beautiful. I mean, we haven't heard it. If you're out this evening and you've seen the big moon, or
you've been mooned tonight?
If you've seen the moon, I don't want to know anything about you being mooned, okay?
Okay.
Look to the eastern horizon. And of course, it's good. I wonder if we're going to see anything, because we drive.
Well, as we're going, because I think we'll take the drive back home today.
If we're taking the drive, though, it's going to be on the west.
No, it
rises in the east and it sets in the west, so it's going to be traveling overhead.
Well, then we'll put back the sunroof.
Okay.
You can
I'll stand in the back seat
exactly.
With my head out the sunroof.
There you go.
Yes. Does that remind you of the time that we were in a limo downtown? And we had gone to dinner. We had taken your dad and...
We
had two limos.
We did, because it was a major deal. My dad had come up from Florida, and we had some friends, and my brother Lee, and brother-in-law John, and we were all going to, at that point, a wonderful restaurant. Oh. It was Seal Blue. And it was just an extraordinary restaurant, and we did it like once a year. It was a big deal.
And so there we had one limo with family and friends, and then our limo was us, my mom and dad, maybe your dad too, and we pulled up. We were right in front of Water Tower Place.
Yeah.
And it was so busy.
Michigan Avenue.
And for some reason, the driver opened up the sunroof, and my dad, who's wearing a suit and a tie and everything, he stands up. And he starts waving to people waiting for the bus outside. And he said, I'll be your next senator. Yeah. We're going, sit down, sit down. And he's waving to people, and they're waving back, who are you? Who are you? Oh, that was fun.
Yep.
A listener says, wow, we needn't worry about Red Peters. It was Johnny.
See, I've been telling you for a long time. Okay, now I'm going to make a real quick left turn,
okay.
But I'm signaling, and we are going to get to our last call in a couple minutes. Wanted to mention something that we stumbled on last week. There is a thing that TCM does once a week. They do a silent movie. We record it frequently because these are things that were recorded or that were filmed 100 years ago or so, and this wonderful restoration.
Yeah. 99 years ago, this one was filmed.
And the name of the movie, this is the one, it has the in front
of it. The King of Kings.
Which was made in
99 years ago, it was filmed by Cecil B. DeMille.
Okay. Silent movie, King of Kings. We tuned into it, and whatever religion you are, it doesn't matter. The special effects and the film quality for 99 years ago,
unbelievable,
were incredible.
Thank goodness we were able to stop and just take it all in and then start. We were watching it live, but the things they did 99 years ago.
And Julian, you would have loved this. Movie made 99 years ago, obviously a biblical movie, but it gets to the part where Christ has been crucified. Now it's 3 days later, and
the stone is rolled away.
Stone is rolled away, and it turns to Technicolor. 99 years ago.
Well, I was impressed with every time Christ was walking around, doves would circle around him. It's like, how did they make real doves do that?
I could care less what your religion is. Or if you're an atheist or what, doesn't matter. The special effects in this movie for the time were extraordinary.
How about the scenes that would hold for just a moment for you to realize, wait a minute, that's a painting.
Yeah.
That is something from the 1500s.
They were replicating some of the classic
classics.
Rubin paintings.
Yes.
Oh, and there was another scene, and this was just, I did a double take. There is this scene where Christ is carrying the cross, and at one point he is helped by someone.
By Simon.
And I look as it does a close-up on Simon's face. Simon was played by William Boyd, Hopalong Cassidy. Before he became Hopalong Cassidy, was playing Simon in this movie.
But he was the good guy because he carried the cross for Christ. It was so good because as a silent movie, and sometimes I just get lost because I can't follow the action while you're reading the subtitles. Mm-hmm. What they did was they actually used verses of the Bible as the dialogue. So
Mark,
it would be
Matthew, Luke,
John. So it would just flash up there on the screen. And, yeah, you know how the story ends, but it was worth watching and just thinking about 99 years ago.
Yeah, extraordinary technology.
Yeah.
And, again, if you care about it, it's on TCM, Chicago time. It would be like midnight on
Sunday night
into Monday morning.
And this was their movie last.
Yeah.
It was that last Sunday?
Yeah. That was us.
Last Sunday. It's the holiday haze.
I know. Boy, is it.
Man, to feel like Christmas was a month ago.
Speaking of holiday haze, I'm about to forget to say that we're getting ready for our last call. So if you would like to be our first last call
for
2026 for our
second,
third anniversary, our second
third anniversary.
For version 2.0. It's...
Yeah.
If you want to call us, call us. 312-981-7200. And if you are our last caller,
you can talk about the Bears. You can talk about the moon. You can talk about Red Peters. You can just say, hey, I'm out here. I'm alive.
Yeah.
I can make a fist and make a phone call. And so now we know Red Peters.
Yes.
We had a delightful conversation with him. And my favorite story was he talked
about his daughter.
He talked about this song, kind of getting legs in bars and even some highfalutin restaurants and bars when they had a last call. And in fact, his daughter I think he said her name was Aurora. She called at 1:30 in the morning. He sees her name on the phone. Uh-oh. He picks it up. She's in college. She's at a bar, and she's snockered. And, that's you they're playing. It was very funny. And
he was so much fun.
If you missed the conversation, it'll be on our podcast.
Yeah. And by the way, the podcast will be up sometime later this weekend. We were really behind in getting things up last week.
The haze.
Because it was the New Year's haze.
It was actually a 9-year-old who got snow.
Yeah.
Not once, but 3 times. And we had enough snow that the boy was in heaven.
And if you would like to see that 9-year-old's picture, you can go to our blog and scroll down to the post that has to do with Patrick Crispin's technology notes.
Yes. Quick story. I got a picture tonight of him in their living room in Pasadena, and he had out his National Geographic science kit, and he had a duplicate of the science kit here in Chicago. And we had so much fun doing all the different scientific projects. But one of the most fun one was, if the temperature is below 32 degrees, blow bubbles outside.
Oh, yeah.
And so we went outside. It was a little nutty in the middle of the afternoon, chasing bubbles down the street. Now, if you looked out your window, you didn't see the bubbles. You just saw these two mad people running down the street, hooting and hollering and screaming.
Well, our neighbors figured it was you.
So tonight, he does the bubbles in their living room, and he says, Mom, we need Gigi, because I mean it more fun. I said, it was fun. It was so much fun. Adrenaline will, you know, it just, it'll drive you. It'll drive you mad, too, because you know when I would go to bed at night, I would say, I can't move.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you would like to see a great picture of our grandson, Joseph, go to our blog, and that's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And, yes, we would like you to subscribe. There is no cost, and we don't spam you.
Mm-mm.
You get an email anytime we do a new blog post. And last week, we did a ton of them. Did some New Year's reflections.
Yeah.
So if you want to see some of the stuff that's gone up just in the past week, again, it's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com, and just click subscribe, and we would really appreciate that.
We're going to talk ourselves out of the segment. This is our last call, and we got a bunch of people, and I'm going to are you going to choose a number?
No, I was just going to say very quickly before we do run out of time that next week we don't start till 10:30, and Joseph's dad, Patrick, will be joining us next week.
Oh, yeah. We got a lot to talk about, too. All right. Five?
Okay.
I'm going number five. Five.
And five would be Joan. Hi, Joan. Where are you calling from?
I am calling from Elk Grove Village.
All right.
I am 90.5 years old today.
What?
You're a kid.
And I'm still driving and got my marbles. Isn't that wonderful?
Oh, that's outstanding.
Good for you.
Oh, my gosh. And
you guys, I wish you were on every night. I'm really spoiled. I love
Oh, thank you.
You're very sweet to say that.
All right, tell us what the...
I met the two of you in person with my husband back before you were even married and you were at the auto show.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my gosh.
And we met you and he was so impressed. And so was I.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
I tried to follow you, but I'm lucky I use my phone for major things. iPods, all this other stuff. No one has taught me any of this stuff.
But you do it.
And now that I'm beginning to lose my sight, so it's getting harder.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll probably be hanging up my keys this year.
No.
But there are a lot of options for people that are dealing with vision problems.
The new Meta glasses
or something.
Have you heard about the...
I have a number 5 magnifying glass on my table on a stand, and I have magnifying glasses all through the house.
Oh, but Joan, we're talking about the new eyeglasses that they've come out with, and these are going to become more common, where it's going to improve your vision. It's called Meta, M-E-T-A glasses. I'm looking into this. It's amazing.
Well, I think that is the name of my number 5 magnifying glass, to be honest with you.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Well,
my brother is Florida was so thoughtful. he sent it to me because I was complaining a little bit. And Lord knows, I have nothing to complain about. Please.
Well, wait a minute. Once you hit your age, I think you have the right to complain about one or two things.
If you want to complain, go ahead and complain.
Yeah, go ahead and complain. I'm curious, are you a night owl typically?
Normally, I don't go to bed until after all my sports, and sometimes, you know, pretty late on those hockey games.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's good.
Tonight was excellent, and then a lot of times I have to wait and finish the game before you come on if it's on a Saturday night, you know, how that goes.
Are you going to be watching the Bears game today?
Of course. I've watched football for so many days. People think I'm nuts, but I love sports.
While you're watching the Bears game, what is your go-to snack while you're watching the Bears game?
Anything and everything I desire.
Right on,
good
Joan.
For you, Joan.
You go grab for all the gusto.
You know, when you have a good pizza or a good burger or something, you know, a beer really tastes good.
Yeah. Okay.
I love you. You're like my spirit animal. I want to be like Joan.
You know what I had to do? I had to pay to see the Hawks. And when they were losing so much, I thought, why am I paying for this station?
Yeah, why? Oh, man. It's delightful to meet you. And I did the math.
Well, out to Elk Grove Village and come to my house.
Do you know, Joan, I did the math that I was in my 20s and you were in your 40s when we met way back when at the auto show.
Was that when it was?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my God. It seems like it wasn't that long ago.
I know. How many years were you married?
Well, my first husband, 24, he died suddenly going to work on his bicycle.
Oh,
my
sorry.
Second husband... Oh, that's all right, because my second husband said he was waiting for me. So I married him, and he died. We were married 24 years, and he died on me.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing at you.
Don't you want to cry for 25 years? And my remark was, I cannot say it on the phone. No.
Joan, you're priceless. I love it.
Oh,
thank you for stopping by. Thank you for picking up your phone and calling us tonight.
You know, you're lucky I can see. My phone is still kind of blurry, but that's all right.
Oh, bless your heart.
I am so blessed, and I am so happy that I have WGN in my phone.
Oh, golly, thank you. And
you've just made our night.
You are going to get your own official WGN Radio T-shirt, and you're going to look swell in it watching those Blackhawks games.
Yeah.
Thank you for stopping by. You really make my night.
Thank you, Joan. Hold on for a second, and Julian will talk to you off the air. Wow, this has been a fast show.
And I want to quickly say good morning to Gabe from Cicero, Illinois. Gabe said, kudos to Gabe Salgado for making us Gabes look good.
Yeah.
He says, I've been listening to you since the 1990s.
Wow. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Gabe from Cicero.
And again, boy, we still have so many things that we had on our list of things to get to, and so we'll try to get to them next week. And again, next week we don't start till 10:30.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Real quick, we're getting reports. We might not see much of the moon as we're going home tonight. Some cloudy. Well, actually, this is the Wisconsin state line, so we might get lucky.
Okay.
Because a couple of people said the cloudy skies are. Yeah.
Well, I think there was a forecast where we may get a little bit of snow a little later, too.
Oh, good. Oh, no, I don't have a 9-year-old with me. Oh, bad. When I had a 9-year-old, I was like, yay, we're getting snow. Good.
Well, thank you, kids, for helping us celebrate our third anniversary of
our
the
second
Steve and
third.
Johnny Show version 2.0.
Yeah.
We will talk to you again next week. Thanks a bunch for hanging out with us. Stay safe.